Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Hi, everyone.
How's your mouth?
You can't be mad because you invited her on.
Yeah, true. It sucks, but it's going to get better eventually, probably, maybe.
Guess we'll what? Find out. We don't care.
What? Well, you know,
hey, we care.
See, what cares about my mouth?
Yeah, Burnett.
Hey.
And I'm just going to... leave that.
She's like, I don't care if Parnell cares. I'll give two craps if that guy cares. Well, guess what? I care anyway, Aki. I still care.
No, it's been a few weeks, but we've got a full party cast going on. Brooke is here. Tim is here. Parnell's here. Chris is here. Aki's here. How is everybody doing?
It's not full because Jacob's not here. He's being a lazy bum.
Jacob, you and Jacob technically aren't party cast members. You're just
I'm close enough.
Yeah,
Aki, pretty much. You're honorary as far as I'm fucking concerned. Welcome
to
the podcast. Also, it's just how it goes, god damn it. And as far as how I'm doing, I'm eating vegetables. Unseasoned vegetables. And I'm kind of enjoying it.
Where's the seasoning at? Why aren't we doing any seasoning?
I didn't have the time to really prep for because sometimes I'm like, oh, what am I going to put on these? I ain't got time to just heat these bad boys up and chew. And that's all there is to it.
I'm probably going to eat refried beans tonight. So
that's... refried beans are good as hell. Love those.
They're better when they're on something, but I can't chew anything. So it's just refried beans.
Sorry about that.
Hey, it gets the job done, right?
Yeah, I had some last night. It wasn't terrible. It was okay. I was actually kind of happy.
Yeah, there you go. I think it's worth it.
Joe, what did you eat?
Yeah, Joe.
When? Over the weekend or tonight?
No, for dinner. For dinner.
The last thing you ate.
The last thing I ate was a McDonald's double cheeseburger.
Ooh, that's delicious.
That is absolutely awful, and I
regret
all of it.
Hey,
watch it.
I want to burger.
I'm not gonna mince words. It is awful. Fucking McDonald's. But with that said, it is delicious, even though the price of fast food at this point is so high that it kind of lost much of the benefits that it had in the first place.
Come on.
Like, well, it's true. Like, you go to Burger King, it's like, man, I'm looking forward to getting this just freaking, like, whatever their burger is. I usually get the damn chicken sandwich anyway. But you show up, it's like, okay, what
it's
is the
home
price
of the Whopper, Purnell. It says it above the door.
Yeah,
I love Whoppers.
I like the chicken sandwich. That bad boy is long. It has got cheese. It has got lettuce for some reason. I'm happy with it.
Long boy.
I think that thing is fucking disgusting.
I also think that of literally everything inside
of a Burger King.
Look, guys, fair. This is supposed to be a party cast, but that is some shit.
I was flying somewhere. I don't remember where, but yeah, I got that chicken sandwich in an airport, and
well, that's your problem.
Well, they rushed
right
that.
No, I had it outside of that situation as well.
I will hear arguments for the newer chicken sandwiches
that are, you know, all the damn rage these days. But
the spicy ones are better because they're and they actually taste
okay.
You said they do spice really well. Burger, I was surprised.
Burger King, if you're listening, bring back mozzarella sticks. I'm serious.
Yes.
Don't make me go to Sonic.
Yes, she is correct on that statement. I would buy your mozzarella sticks.
I didn't know
mozzarella sticks and spicy chicken fries.
They did, and I am mad. I never got it.
Sons of bitches.
Mozzarella sticks plus spicy chicken fries, or where is that, baby?
Oh my God. That sounds so good.
I'm a regular chicken fry kind of guy. I don't like the spicy nuggets.
Okay, respect.
I miss the Taco Bell double deckers and the Nacho Fry Supremes.
I miss when Cheesy Fiesta Potatoes had green onions back in my day. You know what I'm saying?
I used to get the potato grillers that was just like potato, bacon, cheese, whatever.
Those are so good.
And add steak. Oh my God, they were so good.
That's a good idea.
I don't even know if they do. I haven't eaten at Taco Bell in so long, like since they got rid of potatoes and brought them back.
Everything.
The only thing I care about at Taco Bell anymore is Baja Blast, and there's rumors that next year it's going to be a permanent flavor.
Whoa.
So, nice. Congratulations. Which would
be fucking awesome. Like, get rid of Spark. I don't give a shit if they get rid of the lemonade-flavored dude. Give us Baja.
What do you mean, get rid of Spark? Year. I've never seen Spark. Get rid of it.
You've never seen Spark? It's everywhere. It's pink.
I feel like I've seen it like when it was newish, and then it just disappeared. I see Major Melon, but could they have a similar palette? No, they all taste like sugar, but I like that sugar.
This is Mountain Dew, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't taste like sugar. It tastes like caffeine. It tastes like pure fucking caffeine. That's all that bitch is.
I got a secret for you. Caffeine and sugar, they both get you riled the fuck up. It's pretty much the same thing.
They taste completely different.
It all tastes delicious. It all works the jam. I love the taste
of caffeine.
Oh, yeah, Mountain That Dew.
Yeah.
Did you say anyway, Mountain That Dew?
Yes. Mountain That Dew. That's what I said. Mountain That Dew. Yay. But anyway, drink Mountain Dew is delicious. But also don't drink Mountain Dew because it's terrible for you. You got to balance that shit out. That's why I have the same 12-pack in my house for like a year now. I have like 7 cans left.
Oh, Jesus.
I still have some Apple Mountain Dew, the thrashed Apple Mountain Dew that I got like at MAGFest.
Yeah, fun fact about that. I actually drank my last one like a week ago. Oh, geez. And if you remember, I got that from you over a year ago. So,
oh my God.
Goes to show you. Yeah, I don't fuck around. I've been trying to get better with soda consumption. But yes, it was about a year ago, if not more, is when I went up to visit. It was in the summer. Summertime in the city.
You know, you and Jacob were here together. I just don't remember when that was. Because I have no memory. Yay.
Woo-hoo. Woo. It just means you get to watch movies 5 times, and every time it's brand new.
Oh, yeah. I don't watch movies that many times.
But it makes it harder to compare
movies. Are you sure you don't? Maybe you've forgotten that you did.
She is onto something, actually.
Very true.
She might have a point.
Oh, shit, that reminds me. I need to load up some more movies.
This way.
So Lloyd is asking, Brooke, confirmation, did you say that you like Burger King?
Oh, yeah, I do love Burger King.
Everyone likes Burger King, except for one of us, apparently, who's wrong.
I mean, I'll definitely tolerate it, but I don't enjoy it. Wrong.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I will ask this.
I'm right that I don't like Burger King.
I don't like McDonald's.
You don't like
that's fair. That's fair.
My question is, what do you like? Yeah, I get that. I agree with that. But I am going to ask the question.
It's garbage, but I've made it my entire personality.
I know.
McDonald's is fair to dislike because they have nothing on them.
But the question I have, though, is I get it. Fast food is bad for you, even though I still like the taste of some of it. I respect that you're like, I don't think this is good. But what is a fast food chain that you like?
Yeah.
I like McDonald's.
A fast food chain that you acknowledge is bad, but you're like, I'm going to eat it anyway because I'm treating my shit.
Yeah, I do like Popeyes.
Popeyes is beast.
It's good food, terrible service.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyone ever
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Fast food should be. like where Tim went with that one.
Even they're getting expensive, I remember you used to be able to go there and get a $5 chicken basket, and now it's like two can dine for $22.22. Are you fucking serious? Fuck. Maybe it's not that much, but
that's everybody.
You're not too far off the mark. And that was the point of the original conversation. Which is that fast food restaurants, their prices have gotten so ridiculous that they lost the point that you went there for them for in the first place, which was a cheap meal. Yeah. I've never been to Popeyes. Popeyes is good. And the thing I like about them more is that they're one of the only places where you can get a made to order item. You get their black and chicken tenders, which are freaking banging, but it takes like 5 to 10 minutes to get them made because they have to make them when you ask for them. They don't have them ready for you at one spot. So,
their chicken sandwich is so good. All the other fast food restaurants had to copy that shit.
That's right. But Tim,
it caused a situation.
You, You might have said it and I didn't hear it, but what was the fast food joint you said you liked?
Oh, it would be Popeyes.
Oh, it was Popeyes,
only
okay.
One.
Rally's is the best.
Rally's fries
is quite good.
Yes, their fries are where it's at.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They're king just because of that. Hardee's. I think Hardee's is one of the few places
I love Hardee's.
The food they serve you almost looks like the menu.
Too bad they cannibalized Roy Rogers.
I've never been to a Hardee's either.
You should try
as Hardee's. As a Texan, I have to rep Whataburger. I still love it.
Whataburger's so good. Honestly, it might be the best. Might be the best.
Whataburger.
What's Whataburger?
Whataburger.
I was like, what the hell is Whataburger? And who's eating it?
No, that's common. It's very common to call it just Whataburger.
Whataburger.
Yeah.
Remember, it's based in Texas, so Whataburger is very...
Yeah.
Extra R's are definitely recommended.
I've never even heard of that.
If you're on the East, if you're out East, it'd be called Whataburger.
Yeah, exactly. Whataburger.
So if I had to pick a favorite burger of all of them, it would be Whataburger. Yeah.
So is it like a Burger King or is it like a Five Guys?
It's closer to Burger King. I mean, their main thing is like they're just really consistently good. They have a pretty I wouldn't say they have like a tiny menu. That would be like, you know, In-N-Out or something, but like, you know, they have rotating like specials that you can only get sometimes, and it would be stuff like a Dr. Pepper milkshake, which is delicious. Yeah, they have a Dr. Pepper milkshake.
A Dr. Pepper milkshake.
That sounds disgusting.
It's very good.
I would drink it.
Or they have like a root beer shake.
Because I love vanilla float Dr. Pepper. So yeah, having a...
That's what it's like, except it's all ice cream.
A Dr. Pepper milkshake could be pretty banging.
So their main thing is that like most of their sandwiches come with like either like mustard by default or like a tangy sauce or something like that. Like they're really into like their food's like, you know, got a tanginess to it. So like that's, you know, they're all about pickles and mustard and things like that. But yeah, like it's just
ingredients too.
It's just, yeah, it's good stuff. It's just like you get it and you're like, oh, this is actually really good.
Do we consider pizza places to be fast food?
I don't know.
Really good question.
It depends on the pizza.
It depends on the pizza joint.
Little Caesars is amazing.
Little Caesars is fast food. Mod Pizza is fast food.
I like the Little Caesars thing. I like is that it's hot and it's ready. Well, is it good? It's hot and it's ready.
I think its sauce is fantastic, and in some places, because it's regional, there's a zesty cheese bread, which is fucking amazing.
Little Caesars deep dish pizzas are dope.
That's what I keep hearing. I don't really eat deep dish.
Get the deep dish.
It's good.
If they offer it, get the stuffed crust deep dish.
I just get the lunch combo and call it a day.
$5 for half a deep dish and a bottle of soda? That's a great deal.
Yeah. That's my lunch. That's been my lunch at times. I'm in a rush. And it's like, go get it and get out of there. So, yes.
Come visit me, we can get it.
Because
mine definitely has it.
I feel like they all do. They don't have so many options, right?
Zesty cheese bread.
Oh, Pernell, if you go to Little Caesars, they have a new pineapple Pepsi.
So that is a real thing. I thought I
heard about that.
I want that.
Yeah, pineapple Pepsi, only at Little Caesars.
Oh, I was going to say as well about Whataburger.
I think Target sells it.
From 11 p.m. to 11 a.m., you can get breakfast, and they got a great breakfast menu. It's they got really good taquitos, and you can get like a pancake breakfast with like sausage and bacon and all that stuff.
Nice.
I like taquitos.
Yeah, pancakes and fast food is a lost art. A taquito is a breakfast taco, but it's like it's rolled up a little bit more, so it's kind of like a small burrito or something. But you'd order like two or three of them, and it'd be like bacon, egg, and cheese, sausage, egg, and cheese, bacon, egg, sausage, and cheese. Good. Egg and spam, bacon, egg, sausage, and spam, spam, eggs, bacon, sausage, and spam.
Did you realize you're like this close to a fast food jingle, right?
Yeah. Whataburger doesn't. The cool thing about them, they don't do jingles. Their commercials are always narrated by like some 90-year-old Texas cowboy dude, and he's just got like this bassy voice, and they're just like, listening to, and you're just like, keep talking.
Burger was amazing.
He's just got like this. It's like, yeah, Whataburger. Everything is my Bobbin Burger. Burger. And you're like,
Big Burger.
You just want to hear this guy like read a book to you or something.
About you were way too good at that guy's voice.
Boy, better. You just want to hear him read the menu to you.
Thank you. Brooke can confirm because she's a fellow Texan, at least in spirit.
Like that. This is Chris's finest performance. If you missed it, tune into the recording, folks.
Ah, I need to smoke more before I can like do that voice for more than a second.
The Marlboro Man,
come on down to Whataburger and get yourself some pancakes on a burger.
Was that Chris?
Oh, no, that was me.
Just playing.
I want a burger.
I do love breakfast burgers. Like, throw an egg on a burger and I'm fucking there.
Oh, yeah, they will do that.
They will do that for you.
On a burger.
Good old Royal Red Robin. Although Red Robin, I think, is a step up above fast food.
Yeah, Red Robin's a sit-down place.
I don't know what that is.
Red Robin is great. And Red I feel Robin like if they were around when burgers. I was a teenager, like, if they were around when I was a teenager, I'd have been so much happier. They give you bottomless steak fries.
Does Cracker Barrel still exist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's out there.
I haven't seen one in so damn long. I love Cracker Barrel. Their chicken sandwiches are fucking amazing.
Love their chicken and dumplings.
Oof.
I would usually just get like a breakfast platter of some kind.
Pancakes.
Just various pancakes. Various meats. Various meats, various breads, and various gravies.
Speaking of good shit, we should probably get to the games because there's some good shit to talk about this week.
Now that everyone's hungry.
Yeah.
Oh, I am fucking starving. Thank you, motherfuckers.
Nice.
I haven't eaten yet today.
I'm eating right now, so I'm going to go mute while somebody does their review.
Cool. Should we get to the reviews then? Are we all ready?
Sure.
Or did anyone have another fast food place they want to shout out quick?
Crystal Burger, 100%.
Don't they have like the really tiny burgers like White Castle?
Yeah,
I think White Castle and Crystal are the same place.
Yeah, but ooh, they love onions, and I'm anti-onion.
How can you be anti-onion? Onions are great.
I have been anti-onion for 40 years. Fuck onions. If I could name the episode Fuck Onions, I would.
Do it.
You can.
I can't. YouTube,
why not?
YouTube won't like it. Neither would the fact that we have a Disney game first up.
Okay, then write it as I hate F asterisk K. Onions. There you go. That works too.
Or you can call it Real Kids Don't Eat Onions.
Onions, you're on thin ice. That's
I like that name too.
Onions, go to your room.
Onion. I want a blooming onion. Damn.
All right, you ready for reviews? Let's get to these. First game to talk about tonight is Disney Illusion Island, developed by Delala Studios, published by Disney Games, released July 28th on the Switch for $39.99. Minnie Mouse, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Goofy embark on a new adventure to find three magical books and save the mysterious island of Monoth. You'll meet unusual allies and dangerous foes as you play solo or with up to three friends as the Fab Four and Loco Co-op work together as you run, jump, swim, and swing your way to victory. Purnell, what is going on in Disney Illusion Island?
Well, Disney Illusion Island is the first Disney game I've played in, I don't even know how friggin' long. It's been a minute. And while it's been getting advertised on the Nintendo eShop as a coming soon game for over a year, at one point didn't even have a release date on it. It was one of those placeholders. And I was thinking, it's some Disney game or whatever. But I got to tell you, the game's pretty good. You are essentially one of these four characters that you just named, and you are platforming around this island after being tricked to come there under the guise of having a picnic, because of course it's Disney. And you are tasked with helping this island and its inhabitants by rescuing the three magical tomes and returning them to the sacred library, which will restore peace to this kingdom. So at the beginning of the game, you choose one of the four characters. I chose Donald because Donald is like the best Disney character because he's the most real Disney character there is. And I'll take no arguments to that fact. And yet at that point, you also have to choose sort of a difficulty level. The difficulty just mainly referring to how many hearts you get. Hearts being, of course, your hit points. More hearts is good, less hearts is harder. And there's also another one, I didn't select it, but it looks like it makes you invincible. It's like a steel heart. But you choose that, and then you are on your way. You pretty much go from checkpoint to checkpoint in a narrative sense, because the game does push you along with a story where you meet colorful characters and they guide you to your next destination. Say, hey, I need you to find a way into this town. Go talk to my uncle. He'll tell you how to get in. Or go over here and access this door, which will allow you to get to this place. And every time you get one of these requests, the game will give you a sort of a very easy to read and understand location on a map to say, go up there and find that thing. And then you're off hopping around. One thing about this game that I thought I would hate, but ended up not being so bad to me in the long run, there is no combat in this game whatsoever. Initially, when I heard that, I thought that also meant no enemies, but that is not true. There are opponents in the game that will try to hinder you, but they're all there as obstacles. Enemies that fire, you know, like colorful leaves at you or try to electrocute you, all kinds of stuff. But you can't fight them. You have to just evade them. By hopping past them. So it's platforming in its purest form, because it's not an action platformer. It's pure platforming. And over time, as you come across different characters in the game and they pretty much realize you're in need of something, you'll get additional abilities. Those abilities will allow you to traverse new areas of the map, whether it be required areas of the map or extra areas to acquire, you know, collectible items and the like. And one thing I like about this game that I kind of wish more of games of this ilk, you could consider this from a Metroidvania game, I wish they would do is make it so that when you come across a thing that you clearly want, but you can't access for whatever reason, they mark it as a place of interest for you to come back, whether they do it automatically or they give you a way to do it yourself. That should damn near be a requirement in this genre at this point. And this game is very good with it, because not only does it mark when you've missed a collectible on the map and you've seen it already, like it'll flat out say, this is here. But if you need a specific special ability to get it, it will show a sort of a like a caution symbol, like a street truck caution symbol, and it'll have a question mark in it if you haven't gotten the ability yet. But once you do get the ability, it'll be populated with the icon representing the ability that you needed. So you can go back knowing that I have the means. Yeah, it's freaking great. Like, some people might hear this and go, well, doesn't that take the discovery out of it? And the answer is, no, it doesn't. You found it already. You just couldn't get to it. So, in a real world, you're going to take some kind of reminder now. Either you're going to write it on a piece of paper, you're going to mark it digitally on the game's map. Either thing is reasonable to do. But when a game doesn't even let you digitally mark it on the map, putting a note or something on there, I feel like that's ridiculous at this point. We have the technology to do that. This game clearly lets you know that flat out. Like, go back here. You have the wall jump now. You can get the freaking doodad card. And the collectibles range from things like the equivalent of like souls or coins in like another game where if you collect enough of them, you start to unlock images on a cool image board. There are sort of token cards where if you acquire those, they give you memorabilia imagery from classic Mickey Mouse cartoons like Steamboat Mickey or the one where he was like basically Fantasia. I can't remember what it was actually called in the original animation where he was like dealing with the brooms and the flood in the library. But basically that episode. And there's a couple other general Disney cartoons that he was famous for. And quite frankly, the package as a whole here is fantastic. Like, the abilities you get, nothing you see here is going to make you go, whoa, that's unexpected. They're fairly staple platformer abilities. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to still be happy to go, oh, cool, I can swim now. Time to go swimming. Like, you'll still be happy to get the new abilities. And while I will say that I haven't had any moments in the game where I was like, oh, crap, I am really stuck here. There's nothing wrong with it. Every once in a while, I wouldn't mind a breezy platformer, one where I can just feel like I'm accomplishing things, but I don't have to beat my head into a wall with like an Eternus Noctis or Super Meat Boy. This game is not those two games. This game is actually pretty easy breezy. There are things that will give a kid a bit of challenge, but from my understanding, just at least from what I've seen with the steel heart that you can have as your character health bar, they give you means to mitigate losses in the game. And even if you do decide to have health, whether you're doing co-op or otherwise, the checkpoints in this game are mailboxes, and there are a ton of them. They are all over the place. If you manage to run out of hearts, you are mailed back to the last mailbox you visited, which I kind of think is adorable, and you just come right back out. No penalty, just get back to it. The writing in the game is funny too. It's like I have had multiple laugh out loud moments because I guess I still have a kid heart inside here somewhere. Encrusted somewhere. But it made me laugh.
The developer has a good pedigree of not only style but humor. Delala Studios previously did the new Battletoads game.
Okay. So now he tells me I need to go back and play that Battletoads game because originally I was like,
no, you really don't.
Liked it.
That game's shit. Sorry. It's not
good. I've been traumatized.
He just thinks everything we like is shit.
Hey, it's a Disney review.
Review. There's going to be so many beeps on this thing.
You want to know what I think about Disney?
No.
Probably about the same that I think of
it. No, because Disney's listening to this. Be good.
Yeah.
Except one. I own most of the Disney films. I'm just going to put that
in. And for the record, regardless of how you feel about quote-unquote a company, the properties are still solid in my book. I grew up with this stuff. I still care about the characters. Very I like true. The characters. And they will still be legit regardless of what happens because those memories ain't getting tarnished. Mickey, don't do anything stupid. Now, with that said, this game, I can't really think of any issues with it, to be quite frank. The only issue I could think of would be that some people might want a harder game, in which case I would just say, this isn't the game for you. But with that said, this is a solid...
For children, right? I mean, come on now.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people would say, well, if only we're harder. I've seen people complain about the animation style. I'm like, whatever. Mickey Mouse has been around for so freaking long. There have been so many different styles of animation and artistic interpretation used for the Disney mainline characters and otherwise that to make your complaint be... They shouldn't have changed the characters. It should have been like they used to be. Like, what were they? What did they used to be? Exactly. Because they've been a lot of things. In a lot of ways, you could say they've been like this in a previous property. I'd say this is more reminiscent of more of the early Walt Disney animations for these characters than anything. Especially freaking Goofy. But with that said, the game is good. I think the game came out of left field and surprised me. It went from being what I thought would just be like some kind of license, you know, gibberish to a product that I could genuinely recommend to people. Next time I visit my friends up north who are big fans of Disney and their kids are fans of Disney, they're playing this with me in co-op. And it'll be kind of nice to say, hey, time for baby's first co-op platformer. Let's see what you do. So, nice. So this is a good game. Good for kids, good for adults too.
Well, the game clocks in at $39.99. What are your thoughts on Disney Illusion Island?
I would say this is a genuine buy. Now, if you guys would like to make another crack at a Disney, you know, Mickey and the Castle of Illusion or something like that, I'm not going to complain because you already showed me you got the chops. I want more.
Cool, sounds good. All right, let's move on. Next game is Radiant Tale, developed by Idea Factory and Design Factory, published by Axis Games, released July 27th on the Switch for $49.99. Join the circus. Tefalia's comfortable life is turned upside down upon a chance encounter with the performers of circus. Their lack of success leads them to recruit her as their producer to help them on the road. Will this fanciful group bring joy to the people and free the price of their world? Price of their world from his curse. What? Or are they doomed to failure?
Prince, I don't. Probably. I think that's a typo.
Maybe it could be, but
it's gotta be.
Probably. Curse you, typos.
Come on, Brooke, y'all. Y'all hired a localization team for this.
Now I got to check. Is that on the Switch store?
That's what I want to know too. I'm gonna be checking that out.
They updated it. Will this fanciful group bring joy to the people and free the prince of their world from his curse? Yeah, it definitely does not say prince on my write up. But Brooke, what is going on in Radiant Tale?
Hey, well, you know, this one was a very interesting release for me. I was not sure if I was going to love this one, but Joe, I wanted to request it from you anyway. I knew from the minute I heard this game was coming over here, I really wanted to at least try to play through it. Radiant Tale is an Atome visual novel game that has come out in Japan already, and this release is the official English localization, and it's for Switch. This game has been pretty intriguingly awaited, if that's a thing, since it was announced to, and to those who already played it in Japanese, mostly due to his absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous art. I want to say that's the first reason this game is getting a lot of hype. The main build artist of this game is Usaba Kagaru. Most English speakers know them from Variable Barricade, which has some gorgeous art. That's my favorite part of that game. Also my creepy butler, but that is a rant for another day. Other notable games. Title. Dude, that game's whack. Let's chat about that after class. other notable games that they have done the art for, Wand of Fortune, and not sure if I'm pronouncing this right because I haven't played it, Reine des Fleurs, which we hope will come over here because both those games are beautiful, but no announcements for either of those localizations yet. In fact, the announcement for the localization of this game, Radiant Tale, was met with some surprise and later a little bit of contention. This wasn't exactly the first game we expected, or maybe some of us over here hoped to hear was coming next, although it received a really nice reception in Japan upon its initial release there. First of all, as Joe has told us, this has a circus theme. This has thrown some English speakers off, as we don't have a very glamorous view of the circus in North America. For one, most people who aren't kids anymore over here aren't really into the circus. It's kind of like an old school thing, seen more as tacky than elegant overall, so folks over here aren't super hyped for the Circus Otome coming over. I want to talk about that. Before you write this game off because you think it won't be your jam aesthetically due to circus madness, please consider this. Like, I want to call this like a barely a circus theme. Is there a circus? Yes, but this has been glammed up. It's been anime-ified. It's shoujo'd up. It's glittering wonderland compared to whatever you're imagining. Is the game about how you, the main character, a waitress with a pet rabbit that hits home hard for me, Chris, joins the circus? Yes, it is. But do a Sailor Moon magical girl transformation on whatever you're picturing there, because this game deserves it. Aesthetically, thanks to the concept and art direction, as well as the incredible artists working on this. By the way, in addition to Kagaru of Variable Barricade, we also have working on this Miko, one of the artists from Code Realize. Anyway, don't picture circus peanuts and tacky flyers and the smell of burnt popcorn and crying babies everywhere. Picture instead beautiful castles and sparkling crystal caves, magical light fixtures in the cities and rainbow rivers and lakes sprinkled across a lush green high fantasy proper rolling hillside. So much color you'll think you're in Olympia soiree. This is far, far, far more King Arthur and magic and like honor and good versus evil than Barnum and Bailey or whatever you're picturing. In fact, the story may be in a King Arthur lore-centric universe, but I won't say more on that. If you liked Cinderella Phenomenon, and even if Tempest aesthetically, if you friggin' love when games have like elves and castles with ivy growing on the walls and magical libraries and shit, this is your jam. Don't let the circus stuff throw you off, because with the power of anime, if you like those games and are an Otome fan in general, I believe this one will be worth your time. Another reason this game started to get a tiny bit of a bad rep was there's a semi-viral tweet going around in the Otome community that warned this may not be the game for everyone, especially actual adults who are into the more mature trappings of the hobby. I believe its callouts were, this is a really happy, bright, colorful environment, maybe a little too upbeat for some, kind of vibes-wise aims at a younger audience rather than maybe folks closer to my age, which is, you know, surprisingly a very big part of the English and Japanese speaking fan base for this, who wouldn't be down because of a notable lack of more adult content. The tweet warned there are no bad endings and that the game has a long common route and generally just has more of a fun feel than more of an angsty, spicy, mature game that might even have a little steaminess or a little bit of sexiness in its love scenes. This tweet also warned that there wasn't a ton of romance in the game compared to plot, compared to some other games. This is something Otome game players do sometimes want to know going in. While I don't agree with all the waves this tweet made and some of the implications there compared to other Otome classics, I do agree with that point. This is not the most romance-focused or forward game ever. It does focus more on the plot and your journey as a character through this magical world, even if the plot is broken up in the traditional Otome fashion of you need a day like five or six guys to get the whole story. But again, I want to compare it to Variable Barricade and Cinderella Phenomenon, and even if Tempest. I want to say this game has just as much romance in it as those games, if not more so at parts. Lots of my friends love bad endings. They love steam. They love angst. Hey, throw some violence in there, maybe. Let's get crazy. But those friends of mine, at least, definitely also love the three games that I keep comparing this one to as well, especially Variable and Cinderella. Keep an open mind, people, please, because this game is pretty big, and you might love it. Now I'm going to switch gears and tell you briefly about the premise of this game. As always, you get to pick whatever name you want at the beginning of this game for the main character, the person you will be controlling. But if you don't pick a name or name her after you, her name is Tefalia. Like many, many other Otome heroines before her, her parents have died. Sad face. But luckily, you have a wonderful mother figure in your life who adopted you 10 years ago in your folks' past. She takes care of you. Another person who takes care of you, I'm going to call him your pet rabbit because I want to, even though he is definitely just a rabbit-esque mythical creature with no real, like, animal race name. Let's start by talking about him. His name is Raidi. He is voiced by the same voice actor who did Yang from Pio Fiore. Now I've got your attention. Taiga from Variable Barricade. Hansel from Code Realize, and many, many more across games and anime. He is insane. He loves you, as only a pet can, but he also drinks a lot. You better not eat his drinking snacks. Those are for him. He does impressions when you're sad. Sometimes they're kind of mean. And he helps you wait tables at the Combo Tavern restaurant and inn your foster mom owns before we end up living in a traveling circus with several hot men. Anyway, back to the rabbit. He's magical. He can do magic tricks. He's actually a fae, which is a thing in this high fantasy world. And best of all, he's not really a rabbit deep down. He's just pretending to be one because he doesn't want to weird you out, because along with your foster mom, he is an adult who has been helping to raise you for 10 years since your parents died. Don't think about that too hard, but definitely don't say this game is too childish for adults to enjoy because it's not bad enough, because this is just one big old honking age gap we have between us, a teenager, the main character, and a very adult man who we can date. Once we join the circus, which happens during the prologue, no real spoilers here, folks, this is a game about you joining the circus, we meet a few more characters we can maybe smooch on. Let's meet just a couple of them before I wrap this up. I told y'all that this is just a vague circus theme, but make no mistake, while there aren't clowns, there is clown. There's a clown. His name is Zafira. He is our tsundere. He hates you and everybody, apparently. He's so tired of everyone's bullshit before he even started. He normally isn't dressed as a clown, but even when he is saying hurtful things and degrading you. The ladies, they love it. Fans of classic tsundere archetypes will be so very at home in his icy yet probably loving deep down, colorfully striped arms. He is voiced by the same VA who did Ryuki in Cupid Parasite. Okay, so there's a single clown. Will there be dragons? Yes, stupid. How could you forget that every circus has a big red fire-breathing dragon at the center of it who can transform from man to beast at whim? But don't worry. Even in his dragon form, he is so harmless. He's actually single-handedly most of the comic relief in this game. His name is Velio. He's so excited and upbeat. He has red scales when he's a dragon. He's got red hair when he's a human because he's basically the high-energy, let's-go team jock of the anime. You all know the type, who everyone can't help but love. He is voiced by the same voice actor who did Suzu from Jack Jean, so people are gonna just love this guy. He did an amazing job in this game as well as Jack Jean. I don't have time to discuss everyone else you can date in this game. Unfortunately, this review is already going a little long, but I do want to briefly mention Jinya. He is a highborn, silly, throws caution to the wind type noble with a lot of pink feminine flair. He is always ready to go see Barbie, clothing-wise, if you know what I mean. He's definitely a boss bitch. I don't really throw around the word mommy, but I would for him if I were into that, which sometimes. He's voiced by Saburo from Hakuoki, Subaru from Diabolic Lovers, Majima from Chuno Doku. Damn, that's all I needed to know. This was pack one, pick one for me, and I went straight to Jinya. He was awesome. Finally, I'll mention Paschalia. This is already a cult favorite. This is our water element magician, which obviously every circus has as well. He can't remember where he got his powers from. He has a gentle, naive nature that makes you want to protect him. He's very water-themed. His character design is off the chain. This is kind of why he's taken off right now. He's voiced by the man who brought us Benki from Birushana, Canis from Cafe Enchante, and Anishi from Jack John. And there are so many other amazing characters to date, to not date. We don't have time to get into them right now because Joe is literally going to murder me. Joe's going to kill me if I don't wrap this up, what? Which would make Joe... No, hold on. Stay with me here. I have an awkward joke coming. Which would make Joe perhaps the most dateable Otome character of all. As we know, one thing about Otome players is that they love to be murdered by the guys in the game. Just kidding about the Joe. It's true. It's funny because it's true. But just kidding about the Joe murdering me part, Joe is actually very nice. But I do want to end on this note. Dark love and Yandere love is all too real for us. I know that Toma got me into Otome And I'm material from Even If Tempest Guide, no doubt. Yandere's are some of my personal favorites. If you know me in the Otome community, you know this. So take it from me. Are you going to die in this game? No, there's no bad endings. Is there blood? Is there guts? Are there men weeping over your passed out body because they knocked you out, screaming, why did you make me do this? No, there's not. They're not here. But when I ask myself, Brooke, if you had a daughter, would you want her to play Radiant Tale? Otome games are coming-of-age games classically, right? Would this one be a good one for an actual adolescent? And if that one is your adolescent, what was your daughter? Is she allowed to play this, or is as a young teen, or is it too adult for her? My answer is, I don't know. It's complicated because it would immediately be a snap yes, but the more I think about it, the more and more I have reservations as to some of the weirder, more uncomfortable things and age gap and sort of, you know, weird stuff coming up in this game. And if I may, I think that sort of vibe is exactly what the American market is looking for. And finally, I just want to reiterate, please don't write this one off. Please give it a try. To put it more in SML specific terms, give it a buy, because this is... okay, I'm going to wait. I'm going to let Joe do the lead up to this. Sorry.
I don't want to.
Okay, because this is a... I'm going to read my notes verbatim, because this is a... .. Oh, wait, I'll let Joe do the lead up to it. Sorry. This is a buy it for me 100%. Thank you.
I got to say, I didn't understand half of that review because it was all like voice actors and other roles. And I don't know any of these, and they're just words flying at me. And I'm like, people who know these games are going to love this, aren't they?
I got hyped. I was going to like break out.
Was rapping.
The thing is, man, like
she was spitting.
I was like, I want to get in a lot of material here, but I don't want to take too much time. So I really wrote and I rewrote this. But what I said at the beginning is true. I asked myself, do I want to ask Joe for this game, like what, a month ago or 2 months ago when I was asking for this, because I wasn't sure if it would be good. I wasn't sure if all the stuff I had heard that might be bad about it would be true. And I, you know, I never want to give a bad review. You guys have seen me go through that. I want to give stuff a good review. But if you recall, like, this is not like we didn't have a lot of clear buy at Otome's from me this year so far. And this is a very like clear in a way. Like I said, I was wrapping the review up. My notes are done. This is just me ad-libbing. But like, yeah, I really don't want people to write this off. And there's Blurdy Otome. There's Otome Kitten. There's so many places you can go to for Otome reviews. But when I found out I have more time for this review, I really wanted to focus on, you know, let's grab that subset of the community that's going to say no to this one. And let's give them enough information to where they, you know, they might not say no. I'm not trying to get everybody to play it. But like, if you're thinking about not playing it for some of the reasons that I clear up in the review, I hope you do, because I actually think this is a really good game. And I just don't want my, I don't want my cool, angsty, like sexy Otome friends to miss it, because I just think it's a wonderful game.
It seems more like your goal is to make sure people know not to ignore this.
Yeah, don't ignore it because it's circus themed. Don't ignore it because you think it's for kids, because like, you know, I kept comparing it to three games in there, but those are not thought of as like kids games, and I just think it has so much to offer. This is a lot of people's favorite Otome game in Japan, and there's a lot of really compelling reasons why, and I wanted to try to communicate that spoiler free. I hope I did a good job. Thanks for letting me have a couple extra minutes there.
Sounds good. We will move on. The next game is Double Dragon Gaiden Rise of the Dragons, developed by Secret Base, published by Modus Games, released July 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Double Dragon Brothers return in this fresh addition to the iconic beat-em-up franchise with roguelite elements. Every playthrough is a chance at new action. Tag in with 2 of 4 starter characters or unlock 9 additional characters, each with their own special moves and unique play styles.
Unique.
Tim, what's going on in Double Dragon Gaiden Rise of the Dragons?
All right. I, too, don't always like giving out bad reviews, but we'll see what happens here.
I think you enjoy it.
Let me preface don't this here and being like, I think the Switch version might be bad, just straight up. I kind of was rolling around the idea in my head of... by trying it on Steam just to see how it ran. But I didn't get to do that. So we're just going what they gave us to review, which was the Switch version, which I felt just kind of overall felt very slow and sluggish to play. I don't know if that's a feature or a bug, but on the Switch, it did not feel like this game was running smoothly, and there was definitely moments of just more palpable, like, oh, that's just like some slowdown there going on there. But so, you know, take that hold in your heart as I speak on the matter of Double Dragon Gaiden. So yeah, hey, it's a new Double Dragon game. All right, everybody, it's kind of the hot business is putting out new beat 'em ups these days, pulling those things out of the grave and giving them a nice shiny coat of paint. Except Dragon Neon. What?
Are you would you say that beat 'em ups are rising from their graves?
No.
Christ, Chris. Stop.
They need to remake that one though.
That was a good idea.
Do they?
I mean, right. They needed to back then too, but
actually it's funny you say that because there's a rumor they are trying to bring that back next year.
Best of luck to them.
Yeah. Wasn't there a... Whatever. There was a
PS2 Altered Beast.
That's what I was. I feel like there was like
Europe only, and it was mediocre and bloody. And anyway, Double Dragon. What's going on in Double Dragon?
The original one was mediocre and bloody. Yes, there was an Altered Beast on PS2. Now I'm going to have to check that out. Anyways, yeah. So, like I said, Switch version, we'll see. It's Double Dragon. So you have Jimmy and Bimmy, Billy and Jilly. Billy and Jimmy. Billy and Jilly. I always call them Jimmy and Bimmy. The
as
brothers
well you
Lee,
should.
Blue
as
and red. Well they're here. I was going to say that they're getting a fresh coat of paint, but I was going to say how they already got a fresh cone of paint with Double Dragon Neon, a neon-colored cone of paint. You know, that was like a decade ago. Which is horrifying to think about. So
old.
Yeah. So you got a, you know, colorful, like well-drawn, beat 'em up. You got the characters are kind of these little stubby dudes, and dudettes. They're not like big, tall screen filling. Nah, I wouldn't say screen filling, but you know, like a Final Fight, like a Streets of Rage, like a taller, They're chibbier. They're almost like River City, old school Kaneo-kun River City Ransom size. They're stubby little characters. You are going to pick a tag team of characters. Like I said, you start out with four, and you pick two of them that you can tag between out in the levels. And you get to pick the order in which you do the levels as well. There's four presented to you at the start, and depending, so the this game has like a roguelike layer going to it, which might be like almost a good idea where, so the levels, you pick a different direction and if you pick, the first two levels you pick are only going to be one stage a piece, I think, or maybe the first one is one stage and the next one is going to have two segments to it. So the level is longer. There's like parts of levels you're not going to play on every run through because the later levels get longer and harder. And until the later levels are like three, they're quite long, quite lengthy, too long, perhaps we'll see. but they're broken down into segments. And as you go, you beat dudes up, they're going to drop coins. You're going to pick it up. You get that currency, you get to the end of the level. You can buy some upgrades for your character, for that run, throwing up the quotes there. You can buy one upgrade for each of your characters at the end of a level, and your additional money goes into, you build up a bank of it. And you will cash it out at the end of a run to get tokens, which you use to unlock stuff, or you can actually just buy tokens in the shop in the game too. But yeah, kind of the idea is as you're going in there is that like, okay, you're going to maybe, I guess, build your character slightly differently every time, but it's not really all that different. You're not getting like different moves. You might give different moves different damage properties, or a little bit more health, but it's nothing like super significant that you're like, wow, this run I had, you know, this build going on. It's kind of like, I had some upgrades, and more often than not, I was just buying tokens or saving the money anyways. I was kind of like, whatever, it's fine. So in terms of gameplay, I mentioned there's a tag system. So yeah, each character has their own life bar. You can tag them in and out, and when they're out of combat, they're going to restore health, much like in a Marvel versus Capcom game, and also much like a Marvel versus Capcom game. If you get hit while you're tagging them in, you'll give the enemies a little happy birthday, and they'll do damage on both those characters. that can suck sometimes. There's no immunity there. So, you know, the idea is that you build a team with characters that cover each other's strengths, though in practice I was just kind of like, okay, well, your health's getting a little low, so time for you to take a powder. We'll get somebody else in here.
Does health regenerate while the one is out?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it does. A certain amount of it will regenerate while they're out. It's pretty quick to tag them out. Like, you have a... So each character has a, like, basic, like, three-hit combo by just hitting the attack button. You get specials. Each character has three specials. It's activated by pushing the special button with a direction, much like in a Smash Brothers. And then they have another, like, unique action when you push the B button, and then they also jump. And there's grabbing, and there's a tag button, and I feel like there's one other action. Running! That's the one I'm forgetting about. There's a run button, so you can run up on enemies. Though, again, all that felt like the running is just like, okay, it's like a jog, is what it felt like playing this on the Switch. It's like, okay, you're not going, like, the hat fast. I'm, like, looking at the trailer. I've just had it kind of rolling on my second monitor here, and I'm just like, this does look like it's running, like, a bit smoother. Maybe it's just all in my head. I don't know. But it didn't feel like, you know, it's not a huge variety of moves for each character, and, like, the combos that I was putting out and the things I was able to string together, it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to, like, double tap, do like a two-hit combo, finish with a special. The extra hits on the special are going to refill my special meter, so then I'm going to do that again, and then I'm going to do that again, and then I'm going to do that again, and so on and so forth. There's a good idea, bad idea in this game, in that when you defeat multiple enemies at the same time, you get food to drop, except that every time you do it, the screen freezes and a graphic pops up to tell you that that happened. And that is super annoying when you are so good that you're whooping multiple asses all the time. I mean, it's not hard to do when, you know, to beat them up when you're putting multiple enemies on the screen, and, like, by their nature, you know, you kind of want them to stack, so you're hitting more of them at the same time. And it's just kind of like, I think that's a good idea, that to encourage you to do that and get them to drop food. But, like, stopping the action every time is, like, intolerable. It is so annoying and just takes you really out of the flow of the game. But as you're going like through these levels, it feels, you know, so each level has, you know, multiple stages to it, even whether you see them all or not. And, like, those extended stages can start to feel, like, really repetitive, and they're throwing in traps that can be varying degrees of annoying, like in the Egyptian themed garbage heap level. You like going through this pyramid, and it's dark, and there's a spotlight on you, but there's spikes on the floor, and there's little scorpions running around, and people are throwing dynamite, and they're hard to see, and it's, like, just tough to move around without stepping on a spike, or not seeing a scorpion sidling up on you, or not noticing, like, a little stick of dynamite glimmering in the darkness that then blows you up. And it's just kind of like, well, what's going on here? Like, the further you go in the levels, like, kind of the more aggravating they get. Which is the idea, you know, the difficulty is supposed to ramp up the further you go, but it wasn't like a good feeling difficulty. It's just like, okay, you're just throwing more of these enemies and more of these traps at me, and I'm going through more of these same looking rooms. The music in this game, I think, is pretty blah, which unfortunately is something that I think is very, very important in a beat 'em up.
Yeah.
Because by their nature, these are games where you want to be replaying them, which is why, you know, dashing in this roguelike spice was on paper like a good idea, but and having all these characters too, because you start Thruster 4, there's 9 more to unlock. You know, after even just my first run through, I was able to unlock a couple more characters, so then it's like, boom, new tag team, get out there. I haven't even played as the other two characters yet. Get out there and start having some fun. Of course, a Bobo is unlockable. He's in the damn trailer. It's not like it's a secret. Some other Double Dragon favorites like you know, Linda. You can unlock the bosses in the game too.
Linda? So it's like
Linda
with her whip,
and you can whip people.
Cool whip.
Marion, for some reason, is a cop in this game and just shoots people, which is not very beat 'em up, but is very shoot 'em up, and can feel very cheap.
That's very Eddie from Eddie E or whatever from Final Fight Energy.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, I'm just kind of standing on the edge of the screen. Like, her one of her specials is just a bazooka. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to kind of just spam this, pepper in some shots to rebuild my super meter, shoot out another, you know, rocket out there. Yeah, I just questioned, like, a lack of I'm thinking of a particular boss fight on top of said garbage heap pyramid, where I was getting, like, knocked off the side, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, there's some moments where this, you know, you could use some more invincibility frames when you're standing up, or between moves, or just, like, to cancel. You can special cancel, but, like, it's tough to, I had a tough time, like, changing the direction I was punching in sometimes, or it was just, like, I don't know, the windup of the moves felt slow. Again, the slowness might be a switch issue. But the thing is, like, even when I think about, like, the game as a whole, and, like, even if this ran, like, a bit speedier, I feel like after just, like, a couple run-throughs, it's gonna wear thin. Because the levels are so repetitive, because you don't have very extensive movesets, even with, like, you know, a good number of characters, I feel like I was just already feeling kind of like, I feel like I've kind of seen this game. And not having that, like, again, like, the music, it's important.
Especially when you go from out. Yeah. Double Dragon Neon, that had a soundtrack by Vert.
Yeah, that a great soundtrack. Also a weird game. I'm not going to say that's like, this is a little strange, Double Dragon Neon is, but I think in a great way. All beat 'em ups are, I mean, they're video games, they're all weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at this game in light of, like, all the other amazing beat 'em ups that have been coming out in the past couple years, and it just is not filling that void for me. The way a lot of the other ones have, and I'm bummed. I'm at the end of the day, I'm bummed.
Purnell, did you get time with this one as well?
Yeah, I played a lot of it. I don't know. This is going to be one of those weird reviews because I feel like I'm on the polar opposite scale here with this game. So context, full disclosure for me, this game, I know of the pedigree of it. This developer did a previous beat-em-up that I did like called Streets of Red, Devil's Dare.
I was looking at that game earlier. That looks interesting.
Yes, it is a great game, but it's hard to say if you'll like it because it does, they use a lot of what they did there in this game, including the choosing a stage, and the next stage has a lengthier level to it and stuff like that. But I honestly found it to be an enjoyable product. I did have a similar question as Tim did, where I was wondering about the, you know, does the beat 'em up aspect become repetitive? But I tried to weigh it against the typical beat 'em up, and when you really lay it on the table, that's the genre as a whole. Most beat 'em ups that I love to this day, generally when you lay out the formula of what can my people do, you have a basic attack combo where you punch, punch, punch. You have a grab. You have a throw. You have a knee stomp like they do. And you have 2 to 3 specials. And this game pretty much does that as far as, like, its combat stuff goes. Like, that's your general repertoire. It could have used the freaking vertical dodge like Streets of Rage 3 did, and everyone seems to hate for some reason, but I digress. Music... Yeah, I won't say it's like, you know, masterpiece worthy or anything like that. But it, you know, there was a couple elements in there where it was like it was toe tapping because they had a few subtle nods to like classic Capcom Double Dragon tunes in there. And I did like some of the touches they had with some of the different character changes. For example, not every character can actually pick up weapons because I guess they figured if they're going to have like some cheap elements to their attack style, they shouldn't be able to use weapons. Like, I know Marion and Uncle, whatever his name is, can't pick up weapons, but they can throw down. Marion is the best character in the game. I'm just going to say it right now. We got to the final boss fight. I'm not going to say what it was because that's a spoiler, but suffice it to say,
you can just shoot ridiculous. People. You just, like, again, like, it's not beat them up when you're Marion.
But that's the trick, though. She is a glass cannon, too. When she got hit, her health bar, like, freaking plummeted, even with her defense upgrade. So, when we got to this situation where this battle was taking place, like, what the goddamn, we can't keep up. I was like, I got this. Bazooka, burger. Just like, yeah, burgers exactly. Everywhere.
Bazooka, burger.
And I'll admit, obviously, with people might be like, you know, I don't want to mess with this character. Screw that. And you do have general options. You can jack the difficulty up. You can just not select her. Though, admittedly, if you're playing two players, someone's going to have... someone will have to pick her. So I'm not sure if you can... No, you can both pick the same character. So no one has to pick her. I'm picking her. God damn. That bazooka and her rolling bell, her rolling stun gun tackle, freaking boss. But, yeah, I love that character. But the game...
I was put off by her playstyle.
You said what?
I was put off by that playstyle because it's a beat 'em up, and she's a gun.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I get that for sure. Mm-hmm. There are definitely reasons to be put off by because, yeah, she has like a pew pew. Most of her attacks are like distance attacks. Her rolling tackle is one of her only two physical attacks. That, like, one of her specials. But that rolling tackle is also probably the best rolling attack in the game, in my opinion, too. Because she rolls in, then she gets up and she immediately strikes. Every of the other characters I used, it was like, okay, they get like a quick dash in or something like that, but hers was just like, bam! That thing was knocking people back hard. It was, if it weren't for the fact that she's a glass cannon, I'd say she was straight up broken. But she can't take a punch. Yeah.
So, we found that out in the first Double Dragon game that she can't take a punch. So
she can take one
punch. Yeah, one to the stomach, and that's it. But
now, I will say, in regard, before we change, I think you probably want to transition out. But in regards to performance, I played it, and I only experienced one issue. I've played it on the Xbox, and I've played it on the PlayStation. And okay, the only I know that's why I wanted to clarify that, because I know that was a major point. I didn't notice any slowdown issues, but I did come across one glitch that happened one time where we were in one of the stages. I can't remember which one it was, but basically the logic was you're in an area to jump up on a series of boxes and go into an office building.
Oh, Jesus, fuck platforming. God, I didn't even mention that.
So what happened was we defeated all the enemies, but the game didn't trigger whatever the flag was that let us go into the building. So we were literally stopped. We couldn't progress any further, and we had to reset the game. When this happened, the game had auto-saved so that we could at least start that stage from where we were, like, start that stage over, but it still was like, man, this kind of sucked. Now, again, it only happened once.
Were you in, like a stage 3-2, or were you on a stage 3-1?
It was a 3-3.
Okay, so I quit out of the game on, like, a 3-3, and it started me back at 3-1.
Huh.
I was pissed.
We were expecting that to happen to us, so now I'm wondering maybe if the game even realized it or something. But
yeah, I don't know.
We did it. It kept us back to the beginning of that stage. I would have been pissed too. Like, before
3-2 sucked.
Before it put us back where we were, I was ready to be like, yeah, this game, just angry. Like, this is stupid. But I was almost like, no, let's try. If it doesn't kick us back too far, it's going to be a fluke that gets brought up in dialogue, but otherwise, not a game killer. And sure enough, it was only the one time it happened. It put us back where we wanted to be. We had to do a few screens of beating up again, but then we were able to keep going, like nothing happened. So I was like, okay, I can deal with this, but if multiple people bring this up, or if this becomes a thing that happens one more time in the game, that's less of a, oh man, this was a one-time thing, and more of a, what the hell are they doing with this? Patch this crap. So in the end, I feel like the game is pretty legit. If you come into it, I mean, obviously a lot of people are going to come into it with this mindset, but if you come into it expecting Double Dragon 2 or 4, first of all, if you're expecting Double Dragon 4, what the hell is wrong with you?
Seriously.
If you're expecting Double Dragon 2, this is not it. This is basically some other developer saying, we want to take a crack at Double Dragon. We are not Technos. We're not Million. And this is our version of it. And in that regard, I think they succeed. But if you want Double Dragon, as in that game you played back in the 90s, this ain't it. Look elsewhere. If you want Double Dragon Neon, which was a freaking fantastic game, this is also not it, unfortunately. But it is good for what it is, and I definitely recommend it.
Well, it's 25. It sounds like you two are on opposite sides of the spectrum. What are your verdicts?
Well, I just want to point out one thing as far as the repetition is just like this game does only have like four main areas. That is not like, and that's four palettes, backdrops that are used. That is not, you know, a large variety. And again, I think music is super important. And just being like, there was a couple of good songs. It's like, no, it's got to like be 90% good. And, you know, as far as movesets, like, I mean, you compare that to like River City Girls has those characters have such much, much, much larger movesets. And we even in Streets of Rage 4, which isn't that big, there's still more you can do with comboing and juggling that just feels better than the little stub monsters in that game. But that said, so if you're looking at this game on the Switch, I don't think you should. I think it's worth trying on a different platform to see if it runs better. Like, especially if you have it on, you know, you could a decent PC, you can try it out on that. Because then you could just return it on Steam under 2 hours. And you could be like, does this run decently? But yeah, the Switch version just felt, and it took a long time to load. Just did not seem optimized on the Switch at all. I would not be looking to purchase the Switch version of this game. If you're at all interested, give it a try on another platform. But the Switch version is no, sir. I don't like it.
For now.
In my end, I just want to point out real quick that Tim's comment about what he compared to River City Girls was freaking just because going back in the day, we always had those schoolyard fights on whether River City Ransom or Double Dragon 2 is the better game. It was freaking River City Ransom for the exact reason Tim just said, aside from other things, which were awesome. Later, we learned they were made by the same company, which is even more amazing.
Marion in River City Girls 2 is like one of my favorite beat-em-up characters of all time. She rules in that game. And then in this, she's a cop and has guns, and I'm just like, ugh. Like, in River City Girls 2, everyone is fawning over Marion's abs, the girls and the guys alike.
Abs are a real bummer.
I got tired of getting my ass beat, so I got buff.
Exactly. Yeah, she got insane abs to resist stomach punches. That is the actual lore of River City Girls.
That is amazing. So, like, with that point made, I think Tim and I are definitely in agreement that the River City franchise beats the snot out of the Double Dragon franchise, and that includes these two. So,
this is like the 10th best beat 'em up to come out in like the last 3 years. I mean, like, that's what I'm saying.
So in that vein, obviously, I'm not going to disagree with the idea of, like, if you're preferring one over the other, get River City Girls before this. But if we're talking about this game, as you're specifically interested in this game, hopefully you've played the other game, too, by this point. But if you're interested in this game, I will say I had a good time playing it. I did enjoy unlocking the characters in it. I did find it hilarious that they took a lot of the baddies from the classic River City games and gave them, like, wholesome backstories in this one when you unlock them. Like, I want to say, like, Linda is, like, raising money for an orphanage for some reason. But I had a lot of fun with this title. It's a solid product. I'd say play this, play Devil's Dare, Streets of Red.
I am going to check that out. I did wishlist that.
Yeah, definitely do. If you do, let me know what you think of it, because I definitely did enjoy it. It's got all the characters in that game are references to classic game characters like Terror's Magitek armor.
I saw that. Link. I was like, what's going on?
That's who I played through it as. And I was like, yes, this is amazing. But yeah, I definitely recommend this game, and I definitely recommend Streets of Red, Devil's Dare. So.
Oh my god.
What?
Oh, nothing. Just, okay. I'm playing a thing.
Oh.
I wasn't on mute.
I thought it was about the review. You're like, oh my god.
Chris, I didn't know it was that good.
Not good? Is...
No. It's, I'm playing the next game that we're reviewing.
All right, well, I guess we'll move on to that. But, Tim, that's it for you.
It is.
Yeah, do you have a...
Possibly in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah, this might be one of our last big group party casts.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, I mean, obviously, I have not been on the show as much in the year of 2023 as I started pulling back at the end of 2022. Because, reviewing 65 games in a year is a lot when it's not when it's not your job, when you have a kid, when you're trying to still do movie making things and possibly start getting other things off the ground, I'm not going to be probably not going to be reviewing for a while. I mean, I literally didn't review anything in the last month. It's been like a month since I was on the show, so this isn't like crazy, but. Yeah, my
chatter in general on Tuesday sometimes though, without games.
Yeah, I doubt this is my last appearance on this show. I'm sure that I'm gonna pop up again.
I know we'll see you here and there, but for weekly grinding at it weekly, you're taking a step away. I know we'll definitely see you for like sure you'll come on for like anniversaries and
threes probably like end of year. Yeah, I'll pop on when I have time.
Episode 900 is coming up at the end of this month.
So, Jesus fuck.
Yeah.
900. God dang.
And fun fact, we're getting a new theme song for 900. So
we're only hitting 1,000 next year then, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be hitting 1,000 soon. It's actually fucking happening. I'm
tired.
We're getting there.
I'm so tired. My back.
You're like Orange Cassidy. Oh, Renee, I'm just so tired.
I'm so tired.
So, Tim, you're gonna rest and recharge. I'm sure we'll see you back on again sometime soon.
Yeah. But
door's always open for you. So come back and visit us.
Just show up in the Discord.
Yeah. You have the power to just join whenever you want.
Power. So. Just pop in. When you hear Kingdom start to play, you'll know what's happening.
Oh God. or you could use the soundboard and you could like we'll just be sitting here out of nowhere and you'll just come in and it'll be like
Well, I don't think I can play those in here because I'm not a fancy enough Discord person.
Oh, you don't have the soundboard?
No, well, I can't play stuff from the spot. I have the soundboard, but I can't play stuff from the spot soundboard.
That's
in
weird.
A different Discord. Yeah, they make you pay for, I gotta pay for like Turbo or Nitro or something like that.
Yeah, I don't have that either.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Fucking yeah!
To quote a fine movie based on a Mattel product, don't say goodbye, say good journey.
Oh my gosh.
That damn movie.
Good journey to you, my friend.
Good journey.
Nighty night, Tim.
Oh God. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Barony, developed and published by Turning Wheel, released August 1st on the Switch for $19.99. Barony is the premier first-person roguelike with co-op play. Cryptic items, brutal traps, and devious monsters await you. Conquer the dungeon alone or gather a party and co-op with iconic and unusual RPG classes. Get ready to try and die and try again with a new dungeon every time you play. Chris, tell us what's going on in Barony.
All right, Barony, or Barony, if you like. I don't think that's going to stick.
I like that. Nah, we're keeping
Thank
that.
You.
You're full
Thank
of Barony.
You. Exactly. Barony. See, that was going to be my thing.
Yeah. He's right.
What?
Oh, no, he's not right.
Phony Barony.
He's right. He's right. He's right.
Yes.
I don't know what's happening.
I don't know either. Barony.
Me neither. I
what's
like
going
it,
on in Barony?
So, what's going on in Barony? This is a first-person dungeon-crawling RPG. G. It's basically in a little bit more of a minimal style. Think like, you know, VGA level textures in the background. Your characters are kind of voxel graphics. Not super shiny. Like another game that one might be reminded of that I reviewed years ago for the PS4 was called One More Dungeon, which is a Rattalaika game. Also a first-person roguelike one. This one is that, but so much more extreme. Barony is a very extreme title, very much harkens back to the olden days of like wizardry and whatnot, where cruelty was the point. Apparently nerds were so hardcore back in the text-based computer days that you just really had to abuse them to get them to feel anything, and now they own like all the like tech companies and stuff, and that maybe maybe what's wrong with the world today, honestly, is the games that inspired this one. But two of the games that inspired this one inspired me a lot. They mentioned in the, I think it's the Steam page, but they talked about the influences being Ultima Underworld and Daggerfall. Two games that practically defined the 90s for me, especially for a PC game. Like, if I had to, like, say that I played PC games at all, like, I would say the only two games I really played was Ultima Underworld and Daggerfall, just because I played them so much more than everything else. But yeah, this one takes that first-person dungeon crawliness, and it, like I said, it turns it into a true roguelike. Now, what we did an interview with the developer here, so we went over what a true roguelike is versus, like, a roguelite with a T, yeah, and all that stuff. And so just to summarize, a roguelike is where you go on an adventure, uncover a random map, and when you die, you die. You go back to the beginning at level one, no equipment. You are starting the entire game over. Thing from, like, you know, it's not like a thing where, oh, well, if you gained a level, you get to keep the level, or if you gain certain currency, you get to keep that currency. No. This is one shot. You got one shot to beat the game, and if you don't, you're going back to the beginning. However, they did add a couple of quality of life things to it that I'll go over in a little bit. So you choose your class, you can choose a name, or you can select from the very fine list of randomized names. I actually randomly got Chris the Magnificent, and I was like, well, okay, I suppose I'll go with that.
Yeah, that fits.
yeah, but I did like a lot of the game. It very much has, like, that randomness of the names that that I employ when it comes to, like, creating my own characters, so I really appreciated that. And I told the developer to their face, virtually over the Zoom, the Discord, that I enjoy it. Anyway, you pick your class, and your race, and your race really just seems to basically decide your skin color and your facial hair situation, if any. It's not really, race is just not really a thing in this game. They're equal opportunity cruelty. But your class is everything. Class will decide how you are going to play this game from the first level to the last, unless you customize your character through level ups to get into, like, a skill set that is different than how you started. That is an option to you. But let's go first. Let's go with some examples here. So if you pick a monk, then you are a barehanded karate man. You get a huge boost to HP, so you can actually tank some hits, which, understand, this game will kill you instantly sometimes. And if you're lucky, enemies will carve you down in, like, 3 to 4 hits. So, like, a monk could take, like, 5 to 6 hits, which is actually pretty darn good. And again, you use your fists, which don't break, unlike every other weapon in this game. So, like, that's also a benefit. You can just smack people with your fists. The problem is, of course, you're going to tank some damage, and it's very hard to restore life in the dungeon. You can stand still, but the enemies aren't going to stop coming, so you actually are putting yourself in a bad position if you try to stand still and rest in this dungeon. Then you got a ninja character, which is actually that's always the class I naturally gravitate to. A ninja for me, like, I've always liked ninjas in video games. I could actually go on all night about it, so I'm not going to. But I will say that if you are playing a game of wizardry and you're rolling an evil set of characters, you know, with an evil alignment, and you get the miracle roll, like the perfect roll, you can start off the game as a ninja, which is normally a dual class that you have to work your way up to, and that is, like, the peak pinnacle of dice rolling in wizardry. So it's like, you know, ninjas are kind of sacred in this universe, to me anyway. So I picked ninja, and I got pretty good at ninja, actually. Ninja is the one I've made the most progress with. A ninja cannot tank a hit. A ninja will be destroyed by a rat in about 2 hits.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, like, if a standard rat runs into that first room where you respawn, you might as well restart, because that ninja's gonna, or that that rat's gonna wreck you. What a ninja has is about 3 bear traps and 5 throwing knives and invisibility potions and a ninja sword, and you lay down a trap, get the enemy caught in the trap, throw knives at them or something until they die, and then you're good. And you know, you're so good at sneaking that you can set these traps up really well, and you can, like, really get the drop on an enemy. I actually took down a minotaur on level one, which a Minotaur is so badass that you actually have the option to turn them off. Like, okay, so Minotaurs are bad news. And I actually took one down.
Took one down? Oh my god.
I took one down. It gave me like an instant level too, which is great. Ultimately that ninja got smashed by a boulder from the ceiling that I didn't see.
Nice.
Because that is how this game is. But you know, either way, like, you know, you can pick a healer, a knight, a wizard, you know, different kinds of, you know, tropey guys like that. You could be a jester and start off with a clown hat and just, embrace the chaos of this game and, you know, see what happens. And speaking of chaos, this game has a thing where, like, all the items are, you know, not all the items, but most of the items are going to be mystery items that have to be, you know, inspected lest you end up with something that is cursed or the opposite of what you think it is, or something that's just going to kill you outright. Most characters start off with, or most classes start off with, like, a really rudimentary, like, identifying ability. Sometimes you'll pick up an item and you just can't identify it no matter what, unless you are the class that can identify stuff. I think it's the merchant has, like, just this great affinity for identifying and stuff, and so you can, like, kind of see. And you're really going to depend on this stuff, because, like I said, all your items can break. Your consumables will be consumed because you will need them all to survive. It's pretty
that's
serious.
Some advice that they mentioned in the interview. Like, they said, if you're not going to use something within 10 minutes, just don't bother with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't hoard, like, in this game. Use your
shit. Don't hoard, because sellers are very few and far between. And, you know, you have to find a weapon seller if you want to find a weapon. If you find, like, a food seller, you can sell them food, but you're mostly going to be buying food. And by the way, I love the food sellers, because outside of their little rooms in the dungeon, they got, like, burger banners. So back to, you know, Burger King and stuff on that. Even though what they're selling is, like, rat meat and whatnot. I mean, I guess same could be said for... Never mind. That is... I think I'm talking about this one with Purnell. Maybe I should give Purnell a chance to speak.
Yeah, Purnell, what character did you pick?
Yeah, I honestly just continued to stick with the freaking ninja initially, and then I just focused heavily on using the cleric. Because the cleric... Yeah, I'm a big guy when it comes to, like, trying to have some sort of, like... element to, like, healing myself or having just some aspect of, oh, it's like majesty, like magic. It's not just me locked down to whatever melee thing I had. Normally, I like using things like ninjas, because I think of ninjas, I think of, like, dual wielding, and I think of speed and agility. But in this game, it's meant to be more like you're stealthy.
It's stealth and distance.
But since I'm starting with a crystal sword, and I'm not guaranteed to find a weapon that's meant to be really decent with distance, like a bow and arrow set or what have you.
And the crystal sword is fragile, too, so, like, you really aren't going to have it very long.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you find yourself in a weird predicament where you're like, you know, this is something I'll come back to when I get better at the game. And quite frankly, I continue to suck at this. That's my own fault. I had to juggle some junk this week. But with that said... I came away, this was one of the games where, like, I didn't know what to make of it going in, but as it came up during the interview proper, this game has some chops. There's a lot going on here, there's a lot to figure out, there's a lot to come to understand. And hell, even just getting used to, which I will say beforehand, preface this by saying, I think they did a good job with how they handled the large inventory bar. Even the inventory bar takes getting used to, because... while they did a good job with it, that doesn't mean it's an easy thing to just be like, oh yeah, these nine things is attributed to two buttons or three buttons, which then have to be disseminated to two other buttons, because it's one thing to be just kind of sitting and doing your own thing, but when you're in the heat of the moment and you're trying to find the proper item in your inventory,
the moment,
then I die. Because that's what ends up happening usually. Like, oh, perfect, no, fuck, wrong item. Or heaven forbid you're stupid enough to put an item you should not be ingesting in your inventory, in your quick bar, or whatever. You just happen to use that by mistake. Well, tough to boogie. You're going to die. This is one of those games where I feel like people should, if you might be looking at this and going, oh, well, those are so not great graphics or whatever, which, by the way, the graphics are great. It's just the style that he went for, and it's a good style choice. But if you find yourself thinking, like, this isn't, the graphics in this aren't really good, it should be more refined or whatever, well, I would say don't let that be the thing that deters you from giving this game a try, because I feel like by using this graphical style and the methods that he employed here, he was able to do a lot of cool things with what the world has in it. Like, he wasn't limited by saying, well, I spent all this money to set up these graphical textures and whatnot, and now I have to warp them for this character interaction or this interaction with this item interaction. No, you just run around and find yourself being prepared to be surprised at every gameplay session you have here, because nothing is static. And while a lot of roguelike games, you might find yourself going, well, I got kind of bored eventually because I kind of saw everything there was to see. This game, there's so many variables involved and options you can choose before even starting a level that I think it may well be a while before you find yourself going, well, I've seen everything there is to see. And that's assuming you manage to get to the damn bottom of the dungeon in itself. So,
yeah.
This one is a good one to me. This is a game that I did not expect to like, but I came away genuinely liking.
Well, it clocks in at $20. What do the two of you think about Barony? Barony, Barney, Barney Rubble, Barney the Dinosaur.
There you go, Barney Rubble. Yeah, I'm going to give it a buy it. I think that it's extremely well-crafted. Clearly a lot of love, a lot of years of tweaking and stuff went into this one. And by the way, you know, I do warn against anybody who's trying to, you know, treat this like a normal adventure game. It's very difficult, but it does give you certain things that you can toggle off that are especially annoying. I mentioned the Minotaur. You can turn off hunger because there is a hunger situation in the game, too. You could turn off random traps, which is what got my ninja on level 3. You could turn off friendly fire, which, by the way, we didn't get a chance to play this multiplayer, but I, you know, this is multiplayer, which is really, really cool, I think. I actually would like to try that sometime. And it also has a hardcore mode, which I'm not even going to check out at any point. Yeah, and you also can have an extra life, so it gives you like a one-time mercy revival item that's like, you know, consumable. So, yeah, you can make it a little easier for yourself. You can make it a whole lot more difficult for yourself. This game was made with a lot of care, and I think that that is very respectable. And I also think the game's really fun and kind of keeps you coming back. So, yeah, as a fan of first-person RPGs and roguelikes, I would say it is a buy it, and also I do wish or hope that this company does come out with a full-fledged actual adventure like a Daggerfall or an Ultima Underworld, because I would play the hell out of that.
That would be like, amazing.
Yeah, taking out the random elements of it, I actually think would be you know, a different experience, but really, really, really cool. I would love to set traps for skeletons and hit them with throwing knives with a permanent ninja.
Well, it sounds like it's a good one either way. So $20, pick this one up. If you are in chat right now as you're listening to this, you can still pick it up for $14.99 on the Switch. That sale ends in 4 hours. So if you're listening to this via MP3 or YouTube, you're already too late. What the hell were you waiting for? You should have listened to our interview and picked it up when it was $15 then, because it was pre-order, and really it's your own fault at this.
This is why you have to join the party cast streams.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Next game is Hakuoki Kyoto Winds, developed by Idea Factory and Design Factory, published by Idea Factory International, released back in May 2017, and is available on Steam for $9.99. Romance 12 handsome warriors and samurai uncover their dark secrets and conquer your demons in this historical fantasy visual novel. Your narrative choices unlock multiple branching storylines and 30 different endings. Brooke, you were interested in checking this one out, and we were able to get it. It's a couple of years old, but what do you think of it? Is it still worth checking out?
Oh my gosh. So I can't. It's Hakuoki's kind of a big deal. This is a classic, total classic, cult classic, infamously famous Otome. Very, very well known. In fact, if you're a diehard Otome fan who's been around for at least a few years, you've probably either played this one, even though it's older, or you have probably also played or at least seen many of the games ripping this game off like directly. I'm going to do a similar thing in this review that I did a few minutes ago with Radiant Tale. I don't need to sell the Otome community on whether or not this game is good. We know this game is amazing. I'm going to give Brookie's take. I'm also going to just specifically review how this game worked for me on PC playing it from Steam, because most of the time we're playing Otomes on Switch, Vita, and, you know, back in the day when this first game first came out to the US, Nintendo DS. for mini players. This was our first big Itome because it was just one of the first ones to come over here on DS and become super popular. This was my very first console Itome many years ago, and I happened across it so early in my Itome discovery journey. This game is a really big reason why I even got into the hobby, because unlike Radiant Tale and other upbeat, more coming of age themed games, this game showed me Itome games could really be very deep yet shocking and abrasive horror games. They could definitely allow you to date the bad guy. But back to the game overall, this release, actually, it isn't just a straight-up localization of the first version of Hakuoki that Japanese players got. This is Hakuoki Kyoto Winds. It's a localization of a much bigger project than just the original game Hakuoki that came out in Japan long ago. Actually, it came out originally in 2008. This is such a huge project that it isn't even the entire Hakuoki story of the strange tales of the Shinsengumi. Hakuoki Kyoto Winds is basically the first half of the story, more or less, plus a ton of additional characters, lots of new routes, and features that we built on Hakuoki proper. Or basically the second half of the story, there's another release, Hakuoki Ito Blossoms. So yeah, Kyoto Winds not only revamped a lot of the features and built them out, we also got 6 new love interests and routes to explore the story through. I am going to name these side characters really quickly because this is a classic old Itome that everyone already knows about. We don't really need an overview of the main ones. But just really quickly here, Shinpachi Nagakura. Keisuke Sanan, very long-awaited route, we love him. Not only because he's kind of the creepy glasses-wearing vibe character, the intro cold out the gate, he's also voice actor-wise for this character. Nobuhiko Okamoto, we just talked about him as Rady from Radiant Tale earlier tonight. That's neat. He also is, of course, Yang in Pio Fiore. Hiroya from Period Cube, we didn't mention that earlier. Peter Flage, Cupid Parasite. Haiji from Charade Maniacs just came out. And he's, we've also got Susumu Yamazaki, Hachiro Iba, Kazue Soma, Ryoma Sakamoto. So these are the new characters, quote unquote, for this Kyoto Winds release. The original story lets you date the primary most notable members of none other than the Shinsengumi. That word may mean something to you. If it doesn't, we'll get there in a minute. Toshizo Hijikata. Saito Hajime. Soji Okita, want to touch on him really quickly. He's voiced by my favorite Otome voice actor and probably my favorite voice actor of all time, Shotaro Morikobu. He mostly needs no introduction to this fan base and most of anime. He's MP Barbicane, Toa from Seven Scarlet, Gil Lovecraft, and much, much more. I like to think now Joe just thinks I'm like making up words at this point, lol.
Really, I do.
It's awesome. Morikobu does an incredible job in this game. I would buy it just for him if I didn't have other reasons. Heisuke Toru, Sanosuke Harada, and the big bad guy, Chikage Kazama, voiced by the guy who does Hanzo Hattori in Nightshade, Leonardo da Vinci, LOL, by the way, in Ikemen Vampires. Anyway, Chikage, LOML, the self-proclaimed demon who is stalking you through this game and trying to capture you. We love it when games let you kiss on that guy. This guy was basically just one of the first characters that made me think Itome was cool back in 2014 when I played this game originally. But I did have to replay this a lot this month because I do a lot of weed and I have almost no memory of anybody except Chikage, my ride or die, because this game is just old as hell. It's been probably 10 years since I played this one.
I love you, Brooke. You're the best.
I love you too, Joe. Other than him, you may recognize these names of the other characters I made us sit through as we read them out loud, because if you're a big Japanese history buff, these guys are based on real people, the Shinsengumi, a Japanese word that means newly selected corps. This was a small elite group of swordsmen that were organized by commoners, low-ranked samurai. In 1863, it was active until 1869, but a lot of dramatic things happened in those few years. It was founded originally to protect the shogunate representatives in Kyoto at a really derisive time, but they gained considerable fame. This is all the nonfiction part, by the way, y'all, in the Ikidaya, I don't know if I'm saying that, incident and the August 18 coup events, which were super dramatic, among others. Very dramatic history here. These Shinsengumi guys pop up all over Japanese historical fiction media to this day. These guys were like some legit-ass samurai in real life, like legendary level, which is how come the fictional fixation on them to this day. But this isn't a story of how great of samurai these guys are, although we are at times propelled by this goodness. This is a story about horrific monsters, because even though this is a famous game, for spoiler reasons, I won't be elaborating on the monster part. much like the more recent Atome's Birushana and to a lesser extent Nightshade set in this time period. Both games are absolutely influenced by Hakuoki, by the way. Like these games, we start with a very basic Japanese history mixed with some folktale, and we go absolutely wild with it. This game is very much historical fiction, but very much about extremely supernatural happenings. Very suspenseful and scary at that. You play as, you know, whatever name you want, but if you go with the default, you are Chizuru Yukimura. Actually, you can change the given name, but you won't be changing the surname in this game because you're looking for your long-lost father who disappeared suddenly and has been missing for a while now, Dr. Yukimura. Dr. Yukimura. You end up going to Kyoto searching for him, as this was the last place he was known to be researching his very important and mysterious scientist medical doctor work. That is what my notes say. Wow. Okay. Stay with me here. Once you get to the city, you witness a horrific, brutal, and just downright eerie murder. It's a little hard to describe here. The game does a wonderful job. The murderer, while they look human, they just give you this feeling. They're not human. They're not normal. Something is wrong with them. Their bloodlust and creepiness and their bizarre mannerisms and high-pitched voice and laugh is just, it's nothing you've ever seen before. It makes your blood run cold. There's a few of them wearing light blue coats of the famous Shinsengumi private police force of incredibly skilled swordsmen you have heard so much about, until a few seemingly actual humans in the same notable light blue robes of the Shinsengumi come and kill them. You're like, what the hell just happened? And you're immediately captured by the Shinsengumi and taken back to their base because you may not know what the hell you just saw, but it's clear by the way you're being treated now you were not supposed to see that. So here you are at the base of the Shinsengumi force, and they basically spend a whole day, like, in front of you, deciding amongst themselves out loud whether or not you should be killed so the information that you now have doesn't go any further than you. You're hoping they don't kill you, but unfortunately they decide they do need to just go ahead and kill you because even though they're normally supposed to be protecting citizens, they decide it's too much of a liability to let you go. You're sad, you're scared, but they're like, hey, shut up, we don't care, why don't you just die like a man? And then it hits you. They don't know you're not a man, because you're a girl who's been traveling the roads alone on foot for a long time to Kyoto. And naturally, you've disguised yourself as a boy so you don't get targeted, and you get left alone and safe as much as possible. Once again, Birushana, you know, that is the setup to that game entirely. So you tell them, hey, I'm a girl, hoping this will cause them to have mercy on your horrible situation and spare your life. Wow, you're a girl, what were you doing in men's clothing on the outskirts of Kyoto that night? You say, I was looking for my long-lost father, that's why I've come to these parts. Oh yeah, who's your dad? They ask. You say, Dr. Yukimura, and everybody goes silent. Turns out, yeah, now they're gonna let you live, but it's not because you've revealed you're a young lady. It's because you're Dr. Yukimura's daughter, and because the Shinsengumi actually have a special project they're working on right now. It's the same thing you're doing, looking for Dr. Yukimura. And that's all you know going into this story? It's a classic formative Atome, but it's also a horror game, as I briefly mentioned before, and let me make it clear. I'm not talking about, oh, a light psychological horror considering it's an Atome, which has tamer content for young women. No, this is a scary, very gory game that basically opens up with sheer violence described in great detail. And while we're not seeing constant graphics of visual violence and blood here, the narrative descriptions from the beginning are just like, I wrote G-O-R-Y, like, all caps with spaces in between the letters. Like, intro scene is going to describe to you how wet it sounded when a meat cleaver, like knife, lodged into someone's body while you watched. This game, I haven't played 999 in, like, 10 years, but I honestly think that this game is far more graphically violent in descriptions than 999. And Purnell is going to know that's, you know, I was kind of saying something over here.
That's kind of saying something over here.
Yo, this game, like, this is probably the most violent Atome I've played. I'd have to think about whether it's this one or Steam Prison, but yeah, that's the level we're at. Very different than Radiant Tale. It's definitely more violent than Call or Malice, which dark themes, but I don't really consider that game to be very graphic or gory outside of theme, especially when I compare it to this one. Now, since this is such a cult classic, before we wrap up, instead of talking about more plot and side characters and selling points for the game, which has already been incredibly famous and well-played for 15 years, let's talk about a few features for the specific Steam release we're reviewing, because this game is already huge on the consoles. I want to go ahead and say, even though I thought I wouldn't care, I am now honestly glad I own this game for Steam, and I think this is a top-tier Otome release for PC. The UI, while sticking to its roots aesthetic-wise, is super classy. Amazing font choice, too. Absolutely no issues with how this game runs. Mechanically, it's a visual novel, so it seems like we're not saying much at first from the outside, but it's animated. In fact, the only part of this game that isn't aesthetically pleasing to look at is just the save slots. Pretty much everything else was tricked out. And this is a conscious choice. Nobody in dev who might be listening to this cares that I'm calling out the save slots. Like, this is an achievement of a release. It matters that this is on Steam. It's not just ported without any thought to how players are going to be playing it. And, like, I am impressed by that. I don't see that a lot, even as a visual novel fan. Even the achievements in this game have a sort of velvet glove treatment from localizers. It's clear that they paid for, although a little pop culture joke heavy for me, but I appreciate that they really tried to make this an awesome English release, not only translation-wise, but localization for real, for real. One thing I really appreciate here is how well it's configured for controller, just cold out the gate. I am like Joe, I like to play on a controller, or I kind of just don't play a lot on PC. This game wants you to play it with a controller as opposed to mouse and keyboard. It's definitely optimized for that. The UI does sense what you're playing with. It gives you a little reminder of what button you're probably going to want to press next in the lower right. Those reminders are color-coded and just look great. Before we go into rating, can I just say, I've never seen a game for Steam, let alone an Otome release on any non-Switch platform. Give accommodations for the confusion many gamers face, switching between PlayStation and Switch and Xbox over and over again. Notably, A meaning yes and B meaning no, being switched. I don't expect anybody to care about this, but it's a problem for me. I'm constantly switching from one to the other. Before this game does anything else, it pops up with a menu, and it says, hey, the gamepad's button layout is currently configured in the following format. A means confirm, B means cancel. Would you like to switch the layout to the following format? And then it offers you the inverse. And it doesn't sound like much, but like, I heard angels singing when they showed me that, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a really good Steam PC release. They really put a lot of thought into it. And in that moment, I felt that, and throughout the entire experience of, like, I want to say I have almost 50 hours on this past month playing it, trying to remember what the hell happened in this game and why I liked it so much. It really, it's just a really good release for PC. All right, it's got to be like my favorite visual novel release for PC I've seen. Normally I get pretty pissed off. Like, the combinations just aren't there. You want to talk about like Busta Fellows on PC and Steam? Like, you can't even exit out of the game without opening the task manager because it's not optimized for PC, and that's an incredibly expensive, gorgeous game with like the most expensive UI I've ever seen. So this really doesn't always happen. To wrap up here really quick, I will allow Joe to go into the rating instead of barreling over him as I did earlier.
Well, it is a $9.99 game, $10. What do you think of Hakuoki Kyoto Wind?
Oh my gosh, they could have asked for $24 for this, and the Otome community would have shelled it out. This is a great deal. This game is one of my favorites, and now I remember why. It's a buy it 1 million times over from any platform for the mature Otome player. It's not going to be crazy sexy, but it's a mature themed game. I highly recommend playing it here. It was wonderfully done, and it just really isn't always done well for PC and Steam for visual novels. This one really, really was. I would grab this.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fantastic game.
I was wondering if you played it. I was
I reviewed that forever ago.
Yo, this game is fucked up, dude. This game's crazy.
I reviewed both Kyoto Winds and Edo Blossoms both.
That's awesome.
Years ago when they came to Steam.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm going to have to get Edo Blossoms after this because I never finished that on DS back in the day. And then we can talk some shop. I look forward to chatting with you about this one.
Sounds like a plan.
Oh, that is it for you, Brooke. Are you going to stick around? We only have two more to go. I wasn't sure if you were
going to. I'm actually going to stick around. Yeah, I'm going to mute and my microwave is going to be making a lot of noises as I heat up my dinner, and I'll be here.
Cool beans, because next game, we're going to keep the happy talk going with Lisa Definitive Edition, developed by Dingling Productions, published by Serenity Forge, released July 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $24.99. Lisa the Painful is $19.99 separately. Lisa the Joyful is $9.99 separately. Lisa the Painful Definitive Edition is the miserable, hilarious RPG of your wildest nightmares. Hernell, tell us about your time with Lisa.
So Lisa is a yet another in the string of games I've heard of years ago, but saw screenshots and said, maybe someday I'll get around to that. That's today, or rather last week or so. And I want to say that I regret not playing this game sooner. Though maybe I shouldn't, because now I got the definitive edition, so best version of the game to exist, apparently. So the premise of this game is you play as a man named Brad. Brad is a boy, or was a boy, had a pretty crappy upbringing, and you get a bit of a taste of it early on in the game, but then out of nowhere, the actual game shows up where you get a flash and you appear into a far, or maybe not so far, distant future where you kind of live in a dilapidated dystopia world where women don't exist anymore, and you're high on, you are a drug user on a drug called Joy. You are living in a shanty house with your old childhood friends. And one day while out looking around and exploring, you come across a baby in the street, or whatever passes a street in this world. And you pick the baby up and discover, holy crap, this is a... which in this world is cray-cray and unprecedented. You take the baby home, and rather than trade the baby in for drugs and magazines, which is this game's currency, you instead decide, along with your friends, to keep the baby and raise them as your own. Things occur, baby gets kidnapped by some seedy gents, and you are on a madcap mission to rescue that baby. And that's the main premise of the game. But this, in turn, takes you across a pretty shitty hellscape, to be perfectly honest with you. Not to say it's a hellscape without good humor, though, because there's a lot of humor in this game. But by that same token, it can go from hilarious to, oh my god, that's horrible, like that. So prepare yourself. This game does touch on some very sensitive topics.
It's going to be a trip when the title screen shows someone being hung.
Yep. Like, that's a good point, actually. The very beginning of it is like just like, whoa, that's jarring. But know this going in, this is one of those games where the rating system exists for a reason, because it tells you what to look out for you buy the game.
Before I offered this to you, Purnell, I actually offered it to Aki, and Aki, what was your reaction?
Oh, fuck no. No, that game's too depressing.
There it is. But hey, the warning system is in place for a reason. For Aki to say, oh, fuck no, that's too depressing. And valid statement.
There ain't very many games that make me just say, no, this is definitely one of them. No, I'm good.
How much I'm guessing you played this before, Aki, or at least parts of it?
I've played some of it, but it was some time ago. It was back when it first released on Steam, which is, God, I don't even know how long ago. It's been a while.
Same on all that. I also played it right around the time it came out, and I did not finish it.
Nor did I. This is legit.
It's a little deep, especially for, any ladies who might be playing.
I'm surprised you didn't finish it, actually, to be honest.
I should finish it.
Hey, you can join me in dialogue and discussing it. I can talk about it with somebody I don't dislike. So that'll be great. So do it. Finish it. But if you're okay with the ability to say, this game may be rough, but I also like a good story, well, then you are in a good place for this game, because a lot of what makes this game interesting, aside from just the narrative in it as a whole, is the world that you exist in, because there are some ass-backwards characters in this thing, like just ridiculous characters, and many of them can join your party as combatants. And when I say ridiculous, I mean, think of some of the crazy attack concepts that existed in Earthbound, which I'm positive this game was inspired by. And you will find some of the influences on the characters in this very game. One of my favorite characters is, well, I think I want to call him a favorite, just a character that should not be in my party anymore, but I like him anyway, is the guy. It's like a guy that goes by the Hint Lord, and most of his abilities kind of suck, but he's the only healer that you get for a while. So I kept him around almost exclusively for healing purposes. And as I keep getting more characters like the Beastmaster and the depressing truck driver and the Luchador and just weird characters. I can't bring myself to not use this character, and I have not found a decent replacement yet. My favorite overall character I've come across so far is this guy you meet who's just extremely long-winded and won't shut the fuck up with stories. Like, he has dialogue strings that actively make you go from being, this is entertaining, to, this is actually grating on me, to, oh
God,
this is entertaining again, because it's intentional how they did it. Like, his main gimmick, his main quirk, is he's reminiscing about the before times, and he's, again, very long-winded with his stories and stuff, and he talks about his wife, and it's probably the one time in history where I was okay with the "but my wife" jokes, because his whole shtick is he'll be like, my wife, God rest her soul. He'll just keep saying that. Oh, my wife, God rest her soul. And as time progresses, he'll go from being like, oh, my wife is the best, she's all about the same thing, that's why we fell in love, to suddenly being like, that goddamn battle axe of my wife, God rest her soul. Like, it's just like this weird dialogue string where I'm just like, who sat down and said, I'm going to write this guy? And also, why am I laughing? But it's freaking great. I can't express how much I love that character. And also the Hair Club for Men. They're great, too. To be perfectly honest, I can name a lot of that character is great as I talk about this game. Combat, though, I should talk about the combat. Combat can range between random encounters to enemies showing up on the screen, lots of times trying to ambush you. And if they do get into a skirmish with you, boom, battle time starts. Combat in this game is turn-based. You can, some characters have SP, which is like a skill system that is, think of it like MP in a game. And then some characters have TP, which are technique points. Some games you may have played have technique points. But in the context of this game, you start with a low amount of them every battle, and you build it up as you take or dispense damage, along with some skills or items that can boost it, and then you can use skills based off of that. SP, you start with whatever you have, again, like MP, you use skills to burn through it. However, some characters, notably the main character and the luchador friend with the big head, have another type of skill type where they have button inputs that they can press to activate their moves. And it's weird, because for a while, I didn't see the point in using the button inputs, because I'm like, you can just select the move from your skill list and bam, you're covered. But what I came to realize is that if you use the move as the actual button input by selecting Armstrong style, which is the main character's combat style, you do damage for each individual button press and then the move itself. Whereas if you just select it from the skills menu, you only do damage for the move. So you lose out on some, you know, residual damage that may come in handy when the Hair Club for Men is freaking stomping you repeatedly and freaking one-hit KOing your party members, and you're suffering, hoping that this next firebomb or Molotov cocktail will be the last one to send you home. But yeah, stuff like that occurs in the game. You'll be getting into combat skirmishes, winning battles results in you getting experience points and spoils and loot and what have you. The ways to heal in this game, aside from the typical items, can be a little rough depending on who you are, because there aren't traditional ends in this game. Well, there are a few, but they're scattered. The normal way to heal in this game is by staying at a campfire. Campfires can do two things for you that are positive. They can heal you, like I said, and every once in a while you might come up with a little story vignette where your party member or party members will have a conversation with you and you learn a little bit more about them. Again, one of my favorites was God Rest Her Soul Man, because he had a really long freaking story at the campfire, and my main character just wanted to go to goddamn sleep, and he couldn't do it. So the man wouldn't shut up, and he blamed you for the fact that he wouldn't stop talking. But sometimes the negative aspect of campfires is that if you go to sleep and wake up, one of your party members may get kidnapped. And if they get kidnapped, you have to go to the gang that kidnapped them's base and pay a ransom to get them back. And if you don't pay for them, they will kill your party member and they stay dead. They are gone. Ew. So, yeah. I don't fuck around with campfires unless I've saved recently. I'm that guy. Or I found one really safe one that I'll actually travel back to because I know that they watch me and I won't get killed at the campfire. There are a number of interesting mechanics in this game also that I like, such as a lot of empty beer bottles you'll stumble across, you can pick up as inventory items, and then you can find things to put in those beer bottles which allows you to use the beer bottle. Sometimes you can use the item that you pour into it to throw at an enemy, like, again, like a Molotov cocktail, which will break the bottle. But if you use it to fill it with, like, say, a bowl of soup, and you eat the soup, you get the empty bottle back. No, they didn't wash it. This is the apocalypse. You're just going to have to deal with a dirty bottle. But you can reuse the bottle and over again until you break it. You can use up to four people in your party, including your main character, at bars or various special wanted posters or hint posters. You can swap out party members. The one thing that I do like about this game is that you can see all of your party members in your character roster at any time. So if you want to mess with inventory or see what skills they have and compare and contrast it to who you want to bring into play, you can do that without going to the poster to swap characters out, which is how you can come across, you know, seeing what cool moves characters can have, such as the character who just cries. His move is weep, and he will cry. And then it changes the status to crying, which has his own various perks to it, believe it or not. He also can equip a dry stick, which is used to poke at lifeless bodies, but he can upgrade to a wet stick, a dry limp stick, or damp limp stick. It's freaking weird. There's a lot of humor. Like, they do a really good job of taking extremely sensitive subject matter and a dark narrative in some respects, but also layering it with enough humor that you're like, you're on this constant roller coaster, like, yay! Yay! It's well done. This is a game that I definitely am fond of. Interestingly noting, too, also, people who know me know that I generally try to play games on hard difficulties for challenge and just to say, I'm only going to play through the game one time. This game has a hard difficulty that you are allowed to select early on. A character will actually allow you to give you the choice that, do you want to play like this? There's value to it, but it's not smart to do that in this game if you've never played it before.
Yeah, make it sound is it's something meant to enhance a second playthrough with alternate scenes and alternate events. And like when I was asked about it, I'm like, no, I think I'm just going to, you know, do it the normal way. He's like, are you sure you're going to miss out on stuff? I'm like, listen, man, I've never played this before. Just don't pressure me, man. Don't.
Mm-hmm. And I did.
That's all this game is, though, is pressure.
I mean, I will say I did spoil not what it is, but I did spoil enough to know also another reason why you don't want to do it is that normally you might be like, well, bonus stuff. Yeah, I'll take that. But the ending changes, too. And you can't get any of the other endings if you get the ending to the hard mode setting. So you're even cheating yourself out of the traditional game's ending in that regard. So, like, some games you can, like, you know, beat the game, then reload your previous save and get the other endings. Not in this. No, you'd lose out. So it's not worth it. And plus, the most egregious, most kiss-my-butt thing is that, because, again, I read up on it and learned what they changed in it in certain respects. Each save point, it can only be used one time. After you save at the crows, they explode, and you can't use them again.
Oh, gee.
Ever. And there are parts in this game, like I mentioned earlier, how enemies will ambush you and stuff like that. There are parts in this game where you will be really mad if you get hit by a car unexpectedly and you use up your only save point way back in the day. Don't do it. Stick with normal mode or painless mode. Painless mode being, like, you know, easy mode in this game. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about this more in 2 weeks. You're going to be off next week. But in 2 weeks, you're going to be back, and we're going to talk about Lisa the Joyful as well. But for now, Lisa the Painful is $20, or the Definitive Edition is $25. We'll give a full final judgment in 2 weeks on the full set, but is this worth keeping an eye on for now?
Judgment.
I'm going to jump the line on this and say, heck, even if the Joyful ends up not being good, which I doubt at this point, given what I'm experiencing here, I'd give this a buy it right the hell now. This is not what I expected it to be, and I am pleasantly surprised, despite the fact that, again, not for the faint of heart in a number of respects, but worth your time if you can roll with it.
Cool.
I wasn't going to replay this one, but with your vote of confidence so high for now, I definitely am going to give it another try. It's also probably been like friggin' a decade or something.
What about you, Aki? You want to give it another go?
Do it.
I don't think so.
Ooh.
He's like, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
I will admit in some respects, I may have a little bit of an affinity for narratives that can tell between like light and dark. Like, I've loved Omori, and that game can gets rough out of nowhere.
Yeah!
So, yeah.
Out of the three of us, I'm really shocked that Brooke didn't finish this, because this just is, it's Brooke. I kind of am shocked.
I love that. There's a big old grin on my face. You know what? That just goes to show me I've grown up a lot in the last few years. And, you know, I'm going to make Aki proud. I'm going to finish the hell out of this game.
Nice.
Join me, friend. So I want to talk about
the hell out of it.
Fucked up games I know of.
Me or Brooke?
Brooke. So I'm amazed you finished this. I was like, once I knew you played this, I was like, oh, she finished it. And then immediately you were like, oh, I didn't finish it. I was like, no.
You know, I got some theories on that we can talk more in depth on sometime.
Okay.
Nice. But big thanks. Raider Biz just came in and subbed for the 16th month earlier in the show. I totally missed. Latino Heat subbed for the 11th month. So,
hey, that's awesome. Y'all, you're a little ways to go before you hit 20 months like I'm at right now. Yeah, hang in there. Keep up the great work.
You're bragging about wasting money. I'm so proud of you.
You're bragging about the poor decisions you've made with this channel.
Hey, yes. Supporting friends is never a waste of money.
That's right.
Speaking of supporting friends, I made a new shirt design that has cats on it. So check out our merch page.
I'm going to check that out.
It says, I fed Joe's cats.
Very nice. Actually,
that's cute.
But we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Arcadian Atlas, developed by Twin Otter Studios, published by Serenity Forge, released July 27th on Steam for $29.99. Arcadian Atlas is a tactical RPG about the choices people make for love and power and how those decisions tear a kingdom apart. I like that this came after Lisa, so I could be like, Lisa, you're tearing me apart. Chris, what's going on in Arcadian Atlas?
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Oh, hi, doggy.
So, yeah.
Hey, kids.
Well, hi, doggy. Okay, yeah, so this game. So, funny story. This has not happened to me very often. In like, you'd think it would have, but it hasn't. But for, like, several days, I was playing the wrong game instead of this one.
Oh, no. What
because
were you playing?
I purchased... did I purchase it or is it on the... What? I don't actually know if I'm even reviewing this one. I don't think I am. I think I bought it.
I need to hear more about this.
There's a Switch game. It's also a first-person RPG with, like, a weird graphical interface, and it's called the Atla Archives.
That's not us.
Okay, good. So, since I bought it with my money, I can say it's a weird, sucky game, but I actually like it. It's
so good!
It's, like, it's decrepit in this way that I find, like, charming. So, that, you know, I was playing the Atla Archives and stuff, and then I was like, wait a minute. I bought this game. I don't think I'm supposed to review this one. And then I, like, confirmed with Joe that I was like... What games am I playing? Arcadian Atlas was the game. So not the Atla Archives, Arcadian Atlas. Easy mistake to make. So anyway, all this to say, I did play this game. It's, you know, this isn't like an improvised review or anything like that. But yeah, I just wanted to say that I made that mix up and that's on me. So... Arcadian Atlas is a tactical RPG, second one in a row, because I did one last week, too. This one is, you know, like I said, you know, you'll know a tactical RPG versus just like a JRPG or whatever, because everything happens on a grid. You know, there's a grid that you move around on, you can move a certain amount of spaces, you know, it kind of looks like a chess game almost, but it's much more open. And, you know, the most prominent early games of this genre was, like, you know, Shining Force and Fire Emblem. Well, we didn't get Fire Emblem until much later, but, like, Shining Force and then a little later we got Final Fantasy Tactics, which is, I think, when people really started to get into this as a thing. And speaking of Final Fantasy Tactics, this is so Final Fantasy Tactics. I mean, it opens with, like, it actually opens with, like, a narration kind of telling you, this is what the story is going to be about, which is interesting. You don't see that very often. I appreciated that one. They were just like, you know, although it does open it up with, like, Arcadian, the kingdom that never forgets. And in the very next page, they're talking about, like, how the king, you know, the population and the lore and all this stuff was, you know, part of it was forged by forgotten wars and blah, blah, blah. I was like, wait a minute, you just said it doesn't forget. So, yeah, I wanted to point out that they literally mentioned forgotten wars in the next paragraph after saying it's the land that never forgets.
I love
it. Anyway. It's, yeah, that I go brutal in my RP, in my reviews sometimes. Anyways, so yeah, in the land that never forgets, that forgot some wars, you know, just do not perceive. There's basically a political upheaval. A king is dying from being poisoned by plot, and his young wife is about to ascend to the throne, but then his daughters are suspicious, and one of them, who's like very much a military sort, decides to wage war and you know, take on the queen and the proper kingdom in order to accede to the, you know, succeed the dying king as the rightful ruler. And
everyone does.
Yeah, exactly, as one does. And caught up in the middle of this is a young couple in love, both of which are military personnel who served the king, but now have to choose sides. The game actually opens with a flash forward where they are now on opposite sides of the conflict. And, you know, will their relationship survive as they're trying to kill each other with swords? And then it flashes back into the past, and you kind of basically play your way up to that point and beyond. And that's, you know, essentially the story. It's a very compelling story. And again, if you like, if you're really into the original Final Fantasy Tactics, it's exactly that kind of personal conflict that you see in the narration and the story that really drives it forward, and that's really cool. The graphic style, very reminiscent of that. You know, you've got your hand-drawn portraits, but then also your battle sprites in that, you know, perpetually isometric view. Lots of the moves, lots of the classes, you know, they are different, but they will remind you. One in particular is that instead of classic healers, you have like alchemists who throw potions at people to heal them, but they can also throw poison, so they're just kind of a distance attacker and healer. You know, your mages are just mages, they just got cow skulls on them, and they're called warmancers. None of that matters, though, because in the, you know, very, very quickly, as soon as you start the game, you get to recruit a raccoon who is a ranger, and his name is Poncho, and I love him. He is the best character. I actually, I focused on that character a lot in order to make him, like, the most powerful little raccoon on the battlefield. And yeah, you know, I'll let you, like, experience the raccoon yourself, but just the fact that he is there means that this, you know, that is check and mate atheists. So anyway, yeah, it's interesting. You go along the map and you, like I said, you progress the story. Every story beat has a battle attached to it. You can also accept side quests, which will take you back to locations that you've been already to fight more monsters. Well, not even monsters, more people, you know, and like I said, but the one thing that seems to be missing from this, there's actually a couple of things. One is experience points. There are none. You gain a level and you get a class point every time your character appears in and wins a battle. Those points can just be straight up traded in for new skills and new passives. Just like Final Fantasy Tactics, it has like a support skill, a passive skill, and a movement skill that you can assign to the character. I don't know how many more classes you can attach. The game is vague on that point. But, you know, you can build up your characters. Like, you can build up your warmancers to be like a fire path War Mancer so that they're more into fire magic and also fire resistance, up to straight up immunity from any kind of like status effect that has to do with fire. You know, you can make your you can basically make your characters do like a lot of cool things, like but still based in their original class. And like I said, I don't think there's any random encounters to be had. I think it's just you go through the story, or you do your side quests, and you know, just do what you will with that. So there is kind of a you're kind of drawn to keep using the same characters because you obviously want to keep them in those skill points if battles are limited. So, you know, that even though you can create characters to join your, you can recruit, you know, new soldiers, rename them, give them a job and everything. The handful you start off with seems to be pretty, you know, good. And, you know, there's like this whole, system for like trying to, what am I trying to say here? There's basically an impetus to like kind of keep your main characters in the battle so that they can improve as much as they can. However, you know, like I said, recruiting new characters and kind of customizing your party is pretty cool too. I haven't played enough of the game to really explore that fully, but it is there. And there's also like different awards that you can get that you can trade for sort of like improvements to like everything, like just kind of quality of life improvements within the game. You can pick those up in like taverns and stuff, so it's got some good depth to it. Honestly, for being a game that's about as simple, like I mentioned last week with that game, that the game that is called, it's not on my list anymore, Crosstales. When I reviewed Crosstales last week, I mentioned how complicated it is. This game by contrast is very simple. And it also seems to be short. I didn't beat this one yet, but reviews are telling me that it's about a 12 to 13 hour game. So you are playing a shorter story this time, but it does look like, you know, it's very fun. So like there's definitely a, you know, it does keep pulling you forward, which is great, with a nice, nice meaty story. And, you know, you want to see how this conflict goes.
Well, the game is sitting at $30 on Steam. The reviews have been kind of mixed. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, yeah, I haven't looked at a lot of the negative reviews, so I don't really know what people are complaining about. I could well imagine, but I should think that, yeah, the shortness, the brevity of it is probably going to be its biggest drawback. Like I said, it's it is pretty short, you know, and like I said, I would have liked personally for there to be like random encounters, you know, a few more things to keep that going, because like Final Fantasy Tactics had that, like, you know, and it also had like the ability to, you know, recruit monsters, for instance, and like you could raise chocobos, you know, it's like it had all kinds of stuff going on in that game. You know, a big roster that you could rotate and use, and like a, you know, job system with like all these jobs and everything. So it's like, yeah, I feel like, you know, there is kind of a responsibility for games that are hearkening back to that era to like maybe expand a little bit and, you know, be a little bit more like that. Cause yeah, I can't imagine in 12 hours that, you know, there's a whole lot of, you know, in-depth customization, like options and stuff going on. But I mean, you know, for $30, that is a tall price. You know, that does kind of push it into the try it territory for me. But I will say that aesthetically, oh yeah, I didn't mention the one big thing about this game. The soundtrack is like just straight up like jazz. It's got saxophones as the main instrument. That's an odd choice.
Capcom too.
Yeah, it's an odd choice. It's very jazzy. It like even in sequences that are really dramatic and stuff, like, you know, like things are really happening that are like there's a scene really early on in the game where, you know, some character is killed, and it's very dramatic and stuff, and like it's very, you know, but while that's going on, it's got jazz going on in the background, essentially. So don't know what to make of that. Anyway, yeah, $30 is a tall price. You might wait for this one to be on a sale, but I do recommend if you have the means to go ahead and check this one out, because it really is quite nice. I had a lot of fun playing it, and you know, that's always worth it to me.
Nice, sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Chris, you're not normally on the Thursday show, so you don't get to chat news, but some news this week that you might be interested in.
Oh.
If you ever pick up an Xbox, for 50 days only, starting August 3rd, Kemco is releasing a 50-game bundle.
Wow.
All 50 of their Xbox games in one bundle.
Wow.
I don't know the price of it yet. They haven't announced the price. I'm guessing it's going to be ridiculous.
Of course it is.
If you like Kemco, you can get the entire collection. So
I think on Switch I'm missing like 12. I think I have like all but that.
You treat those like I treat the Sakura games on Steam.
Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
Well, you know, I have been reviewing them for 10 years now, so
almost. Fair enough.
I know that the first one I reviewed was on, it did come up in my Facebook memories, like one of the first ones I reviewed, and I think it was like 2014 or so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
19 diggity 2.
Diggity 2. Nice. But yeah, that's it for this episode. Big thanks to everyone for coming on, doing their thing.
This is fun.
Brooke,
this is a good one.
Brooke, are you going to be sticking around for... I know you've kind of haven't been too sure with the news going on and whatever else.
I think I can keep popping on as normal if there's going to be any Activision coverage, either game or news. I'll just sit that one out, but I'm planning to, you know, keep showing up and stay involved. So cool. I'll come hang out next week if you guys want to help you deal with the loss you'll be feeling, because I just heard Purnell will not be at that one.
Yeah, Purnell's running away.
We need you.
Yeah, I get Purnell. To continue to be able to hit on.
And Purnell, like, is it me? That might
be true. I may be able to visit him. So, that'll be fun.
So, maybe we'll get another picture taken together. But, music this episode, we're going to wrap things up with some music from Double Dragon, because we reviewed Double Dragon. So, we might as well. Yeah. Anyone have any final words to wrap it up?
I'm glad Brooks hit. Those are my final words, and I'm sticking with them.
So, right.
The Riz and the voice from Aki. Gotta love it.
My octaves increased.
I honestly wasn't even attempting.
That's awesome. Well, I love that it's unconscious then. But yeah, I'm just stuttering at this point. I'll see you guys.
Yeah, I'm leaving all this stuff. I'm leaving all of this.
So cute. Oh my God.
I'm just waiting for like any final words. Hey, Brooke.
Hey, Brooke.
Closing statements and opening statements.
Yep.